community meeting.
Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to the August 7th, 2017 meeting of the Chelan Public Utility District. This morning we're meeting in a study session. This afternoon will be a business session. I'd like to welcome everybody to the meeting, especially our visitors. And I'd like to remind everybody at this moment in time, if you haven't already done so, to please silence your cell phone or turn it off. That really helps in the conduct of the business. And also, would like to share with everybody, we do have a microphone up here at the table, and if you wish to address any item on the agenda, which you are always welcome to do so, we request that you come up and use the microphone and state your name and address for the record, as these meetings are recorded. So with that being said, without any further ado, I will say that all five commissioners and are here, and Mike Coleman is filling in today for manager Steve Wright, who is on personal leave, and we'll be moving right forward to our item one, which is the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute, led today by Debbie Gallagher.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. My name is Debbie Gallagher, and I'm Manager of Visitor Services at Rocky Reach Dam, and I have your safety minute for you. And it has to do with your eyes and sunglasses. I thought it was appropriate for this time of year. Sunglasses protect your eyes from UV rays and reduce the risk of cataracts. They also protect the tender skin around your eyes from sun exposure. Sunglasses that block both UVA and UVB rays offer the best protection. Most sunglasses sold in the United States, regardless of cost, meet this standard. High energy visible light, blue light, high energy visible light in the violet blue spectrum is a potential contributor to cataracts and other serious eye diseases. Blue light can damage the retina over time, leading to macular degeneration. The retina is the membrane where images are formed and transmitted to the brain. The macula, the region of sharpest vision located near the center of the retina, is the most likely area to be damaged. Ultraviolet A, UVA, and ultraviolet B, UVB, powerful invisible rays with wavelengths shorter than visible light, are the most dangerous parts of sunlight. They can cause cataracts, eyelid cancers, and other skin cancers, and are believed to play a part in macular degeneration, a major cause of vision loss for people over the age of 60. In addition, UV rays can prematurely wrinkle and age the skin around the eyes. The fairer your skin, the greater your age, and the lighter your eyes, the higher your long-term risk, especially if your work or recreation involves prolonged sunlight exposure. Light eyes are at increased risk for skin cancer and certain eye diseases because they contain less of the protective pigment, melanin. I do have an example of this sort of situation. A person that I work with out at Rocky Reach had a situation over the last couple of weeks where they were having problems with their vision. They became very concerned, went into the clinic, saw an eye doctor, and what it turned out to be, the eyes are still healthy, but they had been put under a lot of strain, and the fact that this person has not been wearing sunglasses and does a lot of work outside. So the advice to the eye doctor, get your sunglasses, leave them on year-round whenever you're outside and you're exposed to sunlight, and get your prescription filled for your new glasses, which this person hadn't done. So I thought it was very timely that this happened with this person, and they said, you know what, you can use me as an example. And they are getting their prescription filled and buying some very good sunglasses.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you.
Good advice.
Yes, very good advice. So Debbie, you may not have the answer to this, but in 2 weeks, there's going to be a total eclipse of the sun 2 weeks from today, like 95% here. Way back when I was a kid, I was always told never look directly at the sun. In your research, did you come across anything on it? Can we look directly at that eclipse?
No.
Not with your sunglasses. There are special glasses that you wear for the eclipse. And Suzanne Hartman and the communications group, they're working hard to put all of this together. And I believe they have Eclipse glasses on the way. And they've made arrangements with Dave Shaw to have some really good safety information regarding the eclipse and the proper eyewear to wear when that happens. So I did bring you all a pair of the district safety sunglasses. So I'll leave these with you, and when you're outside, if you do not have really good sunglasses, this will take care of it for you.
Debbie, I did order 5 pairs of glasses from Amazon for the eclipse, but they have to be manufactured by certain manufacturers, and they have to be correct.
That's right, and Suzanne did, and the rest of her group did a lot of research on this, and they do have those correct type of eclipse glasses coming for the employees. Isn't that correct, Suzanne? Yes. Yes.
So it's definitely not like the 3D glasses we wore in the movie theater back in the 60s.
No, it is not.
Okay.
Thank you.
While we have Debbie here, I'd like to just make one quick comment. I attended the recent chamber after hours, and I just want to commend staff, Dan Gallagher, Tika, who else presented that evening?
Well, it was Dan Frazier.
Dan Frazier.
Tika Sellers, Susan Gillen, and Thad Mosey did presentations for Business After Hours. I thought they were spot on. Kimberly was there. For that event, it turned out to be a real successful business after hours for the PUD and the chamber.
And you had a lot of staff there supporting the event, and I just thought it was well done. So just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
It's great to know that at least one commissioner was there. We were out of the area, and that was a really neat thing to have up there. So
yes, it turned out really well. Thank you.
All right.
Did everybody
Thank
get
you.
A pair? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, item 2 on our agenda is the approval of the agenda, and staff has presented us with an agenda, and at this moment in time, if there's any items on the regular agenda we would like to have moved to the consent agenda, or if there's any member of the public who wishes to have an item added to the agenda, they can make that request at this time, and the commission will consider that. No guarantees, but so anyway, Commissioner Congdon.
So I just want to go back. We do have a distinguished guest in the audience today, so I want to introduce Leslie Coleman. Raise your hand, Leslie.
Well, that'll teach you, Leslie.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Commissioner Smith, I did want to just call to the board's attention that there's a typo on item 13. Item 13 reads a resolution authorizing amendment number 2 to service agreement. That's actually amendment number 1.
Okay. All right. And are there any these items that you wish to have moved to the consent agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have resolution item 12, 13, 14, and 15 added to the consent agenda.
Is there anybody that has a concern about that, or does that meet with everybody's approval? If it does, let's consider those 4 items moved to the consent agenda.
How about resolution 11? Is there any reason why we wouldn't put that on the consent agenda?
There were some good lessons learned on lesson 11.
Is that what he said?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right. So there's no other changes. The agenda will be approved as modified. Item 3, quarterly district strategic plan status update. I will turn this over to Mike Coleman.
Okay, thank you. This is our normal quarterly update for the district performance plan. It's the mid-year update. There's a lot of items that are in progress, on track. There are some items that are needing a little bit of additional impetus. There are some items that are complete. And as usual, we'll go through this in the standard manner. where we will cover the exceptions, and the managing director for each of the items will cover that particular item. There's a number of items that are coded blue here, which is an indication that they were completed in this quarter, and I will cover those just as a completion notice in order to save some time. So, starting on the page one, items C1 and 2 were both complete this quarter. Top of page 2, item G1 was complete this quarter. And the first exception that we have is on item H4 to define the priorities and metrics for the 2018-2022 business plans by April 30th. We did not make the April 30th, so it was shown as yellow, but the business planning is on track, in progress, and coming along very nicely. The next item is under the public power benefits, item I2, the Horan Area Rehabilitation, and Jeff Smith will cover that.
Morning, Commissioners. The Horan Natural Area Rehab is delayed. It's caused by a developer's rerouting of the Canyon No. 1 outfall and development of the City of Wenatchee Stormwater Plan. Both of those need to be accomplished before we can move ahead with the plan.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Page 3 is all good. It's green. And on page 4, item H1, Greg Carrington.
So the one thing to stress on this is that our compliance goals for energy efficiency have been obtained. The stretch goals, we're currently behind on those for a couple of reasons, but the main reason is that we've had some staff that have taken on additional projects, and as a result of that, we have not been able to keep up with the stretch goal. They are currently working towards evaluating where we're at, and I'll be able to report at the next quarter how much they can gain. Well, we had a goal of the 2.1. We're about 1.7 is our projection right now.
Okay. Thank you. Page 4, item I2 is complete. That was C9 returning to service, and that was completed on April the 28th. Kirk has the next one, which is the completion of the bridge crane refurbishment.
Yeah, this is item I-4, bridge crane for refurbishment at Rocky Reach. We had planned to start at the beginning of December. Our current forecast is that we will start around December 15th, and that's a resultant from the delays on C8, unit C8, with the head cover. So we have to complete that unit to get to a point where we can start taking the cranes apart. So that's why that one's delayed a couple weeks.
Okay. The next two changes are both completions. The Rock Island Powerhouse 2 modernization was completed April the 11th. And under the Hydro Asset Management Plan, item 1, that was completed on June 30th. Jeff has the next exception, which is the advancing the district's strategy at state and federal levels.
And there's one there, grant funding for the Peshawta Wastewater Plant upgrade. This is on page 5, is in jeopardy, as you know, waiting on the legislature to adopt a capital budget. That work is ongoing. And then, Mike, I think you've got number 5.
Number 5, the state unit price contract legislation, which is enacted by September 1st, and that is underway. On page 6, item U, Jeff has that.
So the hydro licensing reform legislation is making progress in Congress. And further down that same page, we're changing the manpower alignment to match new priorities at Rock Island Powerhouse number 1, which is the cause of that one to go yellow.
Okay. And then item X is complete as of March 20th, the systematic assessment to protect transmission lines from fire. On page 7, item 2A, Lindsay.
Good afternoon, Lindsay Mons. Item 2A is the associated with our substation siting, and it's our Leavenworth location, and this has changed from red to green this quarter as we've purchased a property up in Leavenworth. So we're moving on that. We're expected to be permitted up there, hopefully expected by the end of Q3. And further down on that page, it's actually Leavenworth was a big contributor to moving our capital spend percentage up from red to green, as the purchase price of that property contributed to that 85% year-to-date on our spend target.
And the next item is number 5 under the capital plans, which Greg Carrington has, and that did move from red to green because the last EV charging station was installed.
Okay. where's that one located?
That's at the CTC. Mm-hmm. We had to work through their lease at the CTC in order to get that installed.
Yeah, I think PUD today has a nice shot of Charles Von Reese charging his car out there.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
Our PUD today website has Charles out there charging his car. At the newly installed station.
Yeah. So, page 8, item B, under objective 3, the alternative oil feasibility that was completed second quarter. And then item C, the opportunities to minimize the oil release exposure. Kirk?
This was a stretch goal we had for this year, and that was in alignment with our spill prevention, control, and countermeasure plans. We were looking for things above and beyond what's required as opportunities to minimize oil release exposure. We've had to divert some resources that were planned to working on this to all the work going on and down at Rock Island with the spillway and the Powerhouse 1 modernization efforts. So that one is colored yellow in regards to the diversion of those resources working on that project.
Thank you. Page 9 is all good, no exceptions. Page 10, the first change is on item I2, the issue of termination notice by the end of Q3. That's gone from red to yellow, and Steve has indicated that the State Department has indicated increasing emphasis on initiating negotiations and considering issuing a termination notice, and he said that was a very cautious yellow. So. Next page, page 11, the first change there is Kelly's.
Thank you, Mike. And as you're all aware, in our year-long effort of updating our financial policies, our second step where we're updating the policies related to the individual business lines in Integrated Electric, specifically, we finished that in July rather than June. So we were a month past the due date, but we are complete and expect to be on track for the remainder of the year. And then I also wanted to add a look ahead caution, jumping ahead of Mike, of on our business planning. While it's green on here under P2 to come and present to the board in September of the near final plans, the dates of the September meetings fall very early in the month and don't allow enough time to accumulate the August numbers to update the plans. So we do plan to come to the October 2nd meeting rather than the second meeting in September so that we can have that good updated content to present to the board. So, you know, two days after our date, but still just wanted that to get on everybody's radar screen for October 2nd instead.
And Kelly, you might as well take the completion on item N.
Woohoo! We got it.
So on page 12, we have a couple of items, Q3 and Q4. Greg Carrington.
Yeah, so I'm going to recommend a couple of changes here. On Q1, 2, and 3, I'm going to recommend that those get turned to blue. We're done with the modeling associated with mid-sea operations. And on item 4, it went from green until yellow because on June 21st, Douglas PUD did withdraw from hourly coordination. They began independent operations on that date as well. So I think the intent of this one was to actually get all three PUDs to all agree to continue hourly coordination. And with their withdrawal, obviously that's not going to happen.
Okay. Page 13, no exceptions. Page 14, some of the metrics. distribution O&M cost, fully loaded electric cost, wastewater and water O&M cost. So, Lindsay?
Good morning. These will be discussed in it additionally this afternoon, or later this morning at the finance update. But so the cost per unit metrics on the distribution system, both the O&M cost and the fully loaded cost, are yellow this month. They're slightly above our target levels. And that's mainly due to the higher usage that we saw in January and February of this year. So we have higher costs associated with that for our purchase portion of the power, the allocated costs there. And this calculation, while it is an actual cost in the numerator, the denominator is actually just a normalized value, so it doesn't reflect the higher usage in the denominator. So the way it's calculated makes it look a little higher than we thought. And then moving into the wastewater O&M, cost per ERU. So this looks like a significant jump from one month to the other. What actually happened here is we have been working on our Peshastin Dryden wastewater project planning and design. And with some of the actions that were taken to separate those projects, moving forward with Peshastin, but waiting and talking some more with Ecology on the Dryden project, we actually had to move all the costs that we'd been accumulating for the Capital Dryden project into an O&M type cost. So those, it's not new expenditures, it's just a reclassification there. And in that reclassification, it gets reflected in this cost per unit metric. So this is a one-time action that this metric will stay red all year, however. And finally, in the water system, we had several unexpected pump failures that required repair. I believe there were four or five of them. And at $50,000 a piece, that's a significant hit to the water budget. So this one's yellow. There's a potential we could move back down as the year goes on, but we're just in a wait-and-see mode.
Okay. Thank you. Further down on the page, item H2, having to do with the business continuity plans, that was completed in May. And the next page, 15, standardizing the district-wide project management processes. Jeff?
Commissioners, the processes and templates have been delayed by the flurry of work that we're seeing in both Rocky Reach and Rock Island. The training was successfully completed, but the follow-up to that is still in flux.
The next one is under the intelligent or implementing the business intelligence roadmap, item 3.
Thank you, Mike. And as we execute along our business intelligence, BI, roadmap, we have two areas that we dive deeper in during the year, and this is a stretch goal. And we have experienced strained resources on both the operational side and the finance and IT side. And since this is a stretch goal, it makes sense that this is one of those that slowed down a little bit. So we have a caution here as to whether we'll be able to complete our second a pilot in this area. So we are progressing, but progressing a little slower for our stretch goal.
Okay. Thank you. Further down, item K2, the preliminary capital review process was completed in May. And then item L1, the preparation and conduct custom local salary survey was completed. Page 16, item M2. And Lorna has that one.
When I first selected the target date for this goal, this is on developing the rules and policies and whatnot, bargaining unit language, to implement Initiative 1433, which, if you may recall, was approved by the voters about a year and a half ago. The first part of that was implemented in January of this year. That was the minimum wage portion. Then there's the paid sick leave portion that will go into effect January 1st of 18. I didn't anticipate the Department of Labor and Industry's rulemaking process would be quite as lengthy as it is. They won't issue the final rules until October 17th. That means it's kind of hard for me to get our rules and policies and contract language tidied up by the June 30th. So I have requested a variance on that to Q4, and that has been granted. So these colors will be changing.
Thank you. Page 17, the first two exceptions are completions. They both have to do with the cybersecurity program, completing the governance policy by the end of Q1, and secondarily, the completing of the C2M2 light maturity model that was completed May 10th, so both of those are complete. The fourth item was engaging the National Guard, so Kelly?
So as part of our goal of engaging the National Guard to do a security exercise, also we can refer to that as the Red Team, Blue Team exercise, as you hear about that. Our goal was to enter into an agreement with the National Guard by the end of Q3 to have them come on site and do that security testing with us or against us. And their availability for even entering into the work it takes to do the agreement has been limited. And so they asked us to call them back in October. So we won't be able to meet the goal to get them engaged by Q3. So instead, we're going to look for other entities that might be alternatives, like Department of Homeland Security is also another entity that provides that same kind of security test for us. So our next step on this one is to look for other alternatives to the National Guard, because their schedule is just very full, and they wouldn't even be able to probably work with us until sometime next year.
Thank you. Okay, page 18. Under A2, the redesigning the supervisor safety audit process using the best model by end of Q2, that was completed March 27th. Page 19, no exceptions. Page 20, item G, conduct a facilitated senior management team process to identify and define outcomes desired from an integrated talent management philosophy, going from green to yellow. Lorna?
So this was also a stretch goal, and as Kelly was stating, this is the one that it makes sense to have pushed off a little bit in deference to people's schedules. And really the problem for us was simply that people's schedules are so crammed. We were unable to get a meeting with a senior team by the end of the quarter two. So we have that now scheduled for August 31st.
Thank you. Page 21, the safety metrics. Lorna?
I have good news to report all around here on the incident rate that has improved and is below the 4.0 threshold for Q2, and that's a 12-month rolling measure. On lost time incident rate, that one has also improved. It was 1.04 last quarter. It's now 0.71. And the days away restricted and transferred rate has improved from 1.94 to 1.42. And then senior team safety site visits, I was a little bit worried about in Q1. We weren't half of the way toward making the six-month goal, but we have made a change in how we report. So we got that onto the PUD Today SharePoint site, and people are able to report there, and made a little bit of a push in June, and we got that one taken care of.
Okay. Thank you. And page 22, no exceptions. So that would complete our district quarterly performance plan update.
Super. Thank you
very much.
I want to say that I did go through this before we came into this meeting, and the explanation that the senior management team provides here really provides a lot of clarity that is not evident with the paper report. You know, a lot of times, you know, think you can read something on paper, but what you've provided is of great value to this commissioner, so thank you. Item 4, energy resources update.
This is the normal quarterly energy resources update. Greg Carrington, Janet Jaspers, and Andrew Grissel.
Commissioners, Greg Carrington, and with me is Andrew Grissel and Janet Jaspers. As he mentioned, this is our second quarter update where we typically go through here and just tell you about changes, but there's been a lot of changes, so it's going to be a little bit of a diversion this week about some of the things that have changed. Just a reminder, there's no action required. This is just purely an update. Let's get the slides up here.
We blame Lisa.
Lisa said it was Mike is totally in charge of this meeting. So anything that goes wrong, it's Mike's fault this week.
Now you know the rules, Mike.
I just learned them.
You can go on. You can go on to the next slide. So some of the things you're going to be hearing is an overview of where our net wholesale position is. It's gone from the forecast at 121.9 to 124.2, so that's good news. We're going to talk a little bit about specified source energy sales, about 3.8 million, which is specified source, you remember, is the carbon-free attributes being sold in California. And then finally, I mentioned on the overview of the balanced scorecard that energy efficiency programs are meeting the compliance target, and Andrew will give you more details about that. So on this slide right here, you're going to see the red lines that are on here indicate what our minimum hedge targets are and our maximum. So you can see that in 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2021, we're hedged up tight, which means that we're at our maximum hedge targets in those years. And what we've done this time is we've shown you what the results of that hedging program are and how it's changed the bottom line. So you can go on to the next page. Here, the changes here are going to be two contracts have been added. The first contract that we've added is the Avista contract, shown in purple. That is a long-term slice product that extends all the way through 10-year time period. And then the dark blue that is on here is Avangrid, which used to be Iberdrola. Two slides in, I'll give you the details associated with both of those contracts that we've been able to successfully negotiate. This slide right here is showing you the results of those long-term slice contracts. One of the things that you'll note is that the amount of changes that are occurring in the outer years associated with the long-term contracts, and you can see if you take 2023 and as an example, you'll note that the tails associated with that have increased significantly. In particular, you'll see that the if you take a look at the 1 second from the right, that one right there, you'll see that the minimum revenue expectation went from $44 million up to $65 million. And if you add those all up, then on the next page, you'll see at the very bottom there, our expected results over that time period have improved by over $40 million, and it's a result of those two long-term contracts. The details of them are listed here. The Avista contract is a 10-year term, 5% slice of Rocky Reach and Rock Island. And then the Avangrid is a 5-year contract, and it's for the 5 years and 5% of Rocky Reach and Rock Island as well. So let me just pause there and see if you have any questions about any of those slides.
For me, the contracts shifts the responsibility of not the responsibility, the risk of flow to the customer.
Yeah, it addressed really three major areas for us. It changes the risk profile. It addresses the price risk over time. It takes the stream flow risk, and then the operational risk become the responsibility of the parties that are basically taking those contracts.
Yeah.
So if it turns out that we have a low flow year or a turbine, you know, kicks offline, we all share equally the responsibility and the costs associated with that.
Thank you.
Okay. Janet's going to give you the update on the river flows.
Thank you. So last quarter we came to you and we had some pretty high flows, especially in March, continued in April with 155% of normal and 182% of normal. So far in the year, we've had it right at 140% of normal.
Wow.
That was not counting July. But when you look at the whole water supply forecast, the January through July ended up being 126% of normal at Grand Coulee. And the difference between the two is really the difference between regulated flow and unregulated flow. So just a real different water year this year. Kind of started, and the green line on this chart behind here is a normal line. So it started off above normal snowpack, went down to close to 80% of normal, and then really increased throughout the year, got up to about 100, I think it was 100, high 30s, 135% of normal, and then finished the year at 126% of normal.
So, Janet, in case people forget, with 105 degree weather, back when we were having that low flow in February, it was cold.
Yes, it was very cold. Yes. Our first snowfall stayed on the ground like virtually for the entire winter, right? And it seems like a distant memory at this particular moment.
Yeah, we did have, I think, very cold January and February, and Lindsay had alluded to real higher power purchases for us, and we actually had less revenue from net wholesales.
We always talk about the duck diagram. This looks like the dragon diagram.
And then kind of looking forward for climate, on the left, we have a precip chart, and the brown over our state is showing lower than normal precip. On the right, we have the temperature chart, and the orange is showing hotter than normal temperatures. Sometimes the Canadian meteorologists have a little bit different perspective, but this time they pretty much align. So on the left, we have the precip, and so the blue in our area is for drier than normal, and over on the right, is for temperatures, and we have pretty much red across the whole section of Canada, and so red is for warmer than normal. Kind of switching gears and looking at natural gas prices from last quarter, when we came to you, the price of natural gas that went from $3.36 to now it's $2.94, so about a 40 cent drop in the price of natural gas. But this is January through July 2017. If you look at back from 2002 to 2017, the chart that we just showed is just this yellow box here, is that time frame. So even though 40 cents sounds like a lot, if you look at the whole perspective, it's not that much based on this 15-year timeline. And switching to how those affect electricity prices, this chart just shows the Mid-C flat annual prices. At budget time 2017, or the forecast for 2017 prices was $22.49. When we came to you last quarter, 2017 prices were $20.11. And on July 25th, they were $20.48, which is up 37 cents since last quarter. And then how those prices have changed over the course of 6 years. And so the budget line on this chart is the dashed blue line. And the current forecast is the solid black line. And so in Q1, Q2, you can just see in 2017, the actual prices were quite a bit low what was happening at budget time. And then also in these out years, you can see that the solid black line, which is the current forecast, is $3 to $4, sometimes a little bit over $4 less than the price was mid-November 2016 at budget time. Then kind of looking at the wrap-up of all of the net wholesale revenue for 2017, Greg had shared that we're about $2.3 million above budget. Some of the big factors are just net wholesale revenue is higher by $1.4 million, And then also our real-time revenue is up about $900,000 from budget time. And take a look at net wholesale revenue forecast out through 2027. One of the charts that Greg had shared was we were hedged up really tight for the first 3-4 years. And you can see that these timelines are the wholesale revenue are right on top of each other. And that's because we are hedged up tight. So there's very little movement of our wholesale revenue forecast when the price does move. And over on the right-hand side of the chart, 2022 through 2027, at budget time, we had used a budget, which is this dashed blue line. Our current is the black line. And what Greg had also shared was just us implementing those last two slices. The difference between where the black line was and where it is today, out through 2030, is $40 million.
Question?
Sure.
Looking at that chart, you know, we're showing a steady downward trend for 4 years and then a stabilization and maybe a slight uptick. What's the cause of that change?
The execution of the long-term slice product was the cause of that. The change that occurred. So in combination of
the long
pricing in combination with what we did for a long term. And then that's the reasons why what Janet was saying that they're on top of each other during the first 4 years is because we're hedged up so tightly. There's not much variability in predicted outcomes in the what the forecast was.
Gotcha. Okay. Switching to Lake Chelan, here we have a glimpse of the whole operating year, which is October 1st through the end of September. The blue shaded area is our normal operating range. And I guess it's showing up as kind of a dark green line on this chart is our actual year elevation. And so we met or exceeded the first 4 spring minimum target elevations, which are shown in these yellow diamonds. And so we're up close to 1099.5 right now. This kind of orange shaded region is our future normal operating range or expected operating range. So, and along with the Columbia Basin, which had a kind of the dragon water year, Lake Chelan probably had a dragon water year too. So our Chelan PD's forecast on April 1st was for 106% runoff. And at that time, the Northwest River Forecast Center had a 98% runoff forecast. Lots of April precip. Some of the sites had about 400% of normal precip just in April. We adjusted ours upward. Northwest River Forecast Center adjusted theirs upward throughout that whole season. And we ended up right at 130% of normal runoff. Take a look at some recent things that have happened in the market. One kind of close to us here in Eastern Washington is Hydro One has actually acquired Avista Corporation for $5.3 billion. You can look at their prices. That deal is still pending and approval is expected in 2018. Over on the upper right, Berkshire Hathaway Energy has initiated the agreement to buy Energy Future Holdings for $9 billion. So another big kind of transmission transaction. And then across the bottom of the page, BPA is actually proposing some rate increases. And so for hourly service and transmission, 175% rate increase. And in their wholesale power rates, 5.5% rate increase at this point. And now I'm going to hand it back to Andrew Grissel.
Thank you. As you heard Greg mention earlier, we have met our compliance goal, which is a two-year goal, and we met that last year. We met the two-year goal with just last year's savings, and so this year we were working on a stretch goal. We are behind on that stretch goal. This chart table shows where we are at, and we met together as a group and are taking some measures to try to move that up. If we didn't do anything, we would be about 1.7 average megawatts forecasted by the end of the year. However, we've got a plan in place to move our forecast upwards, including we have some full staff back with us full time. He's already been out knocking on doors, commercial owners, and that's already paying off. We've seen a pretty good uptake on that. We also have a lot of data that we've acquired through our conservation potential assessment audits, which is going out to residential and commercial locations. And so we're taking that data, and we had planned to use it starting next year to start being able to target market a little bit more. We're going to try to do that this year too, to help move that up a little bit. And so we've got some plans in place. We want to get up to as close to that stretch goal as we can. And so it's been a little more challenging this year, but that's to be expected as well when you're moving that much savings from forward, moving it to this current year.
Goes to our conversation, very appreciative of the energy efficiency that is available for our customers, and this particular person has taken advantage of it and was very grateful. Mm-hmm. So just nice feedback.
Great.
Yeah, that's when you get buttonholed with that one, that's fine.
Yeah. We appreciate hearing that as well.
Yeah.
And the Lightly newsletter is a letter that is a newsletter that Susan Gillen puts out, and she's highlighting a family of six in the community that has taken part in a number of measures. And their energy bill is over the year is almost $400 lower than what it was going to be. And so they're extremely happy too, but they're going to be a spotlight in this upcoming newsletter. And these are just another couple of items of interest. Keeping the commissioners updated on the streetlight project that we've been continually taking, small steps down the path. We received some additional state commerce grant funding. We had mentioned at the last quarterly update that we were applying for additional funds. We received an additional $120,000 from Commerce, and that brings our total up from them to be about $280,000. So that's great. We're almost ready to for a Transportation Improvement Board request. That is dependent on the smaller cities and working through. They had a lot more lights and data to look through, and so that's been a little bit slower process. But we've been really engaged with them. We just finished about 2 weeks ago, spending most of that week having meetings with staff from each of the local entities, making sure that they're comfortable with what we have planned and what we have designed. And we've been receiving great feedback from that as well. So, and then just our last item on there, just something that our group continues to work on. And we are now able for about four of our programs to be able to go to online at our conservation webpage and actually do the applications all online. And when you have receipts, you can actually take a picture of the receipt, upload it, do all those sorts of things that we're used to doing with our banking and all those other things. And so we've been hearing a lot of good response to that, and about 50% of our weatherization rebates are now coming in that way, which is just great. It reduces paper, and it's just we have everything we need, and the customers don't have to try to mail stuff in and all those sorts of things. So we're happy about that.
Good.
So in conclusion, the first thing is that our expected wholesale revenues for 2017 are up by about $2.3 million. You also heard me say that our expected results between now and 2030 have improved by $40 million, which is really good news for the district as a whole. specified source sales contributed to that, and then Andrew just gave you the update on the energy efficiency. So with that, we'll pause, see if there's any questions about anything that we've presented so far. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, second quarter finance review and investment update.
Correct. Craig Koontz and Mark O'Brien will be delivering that. A little bit better than first quarter. They'll provide us the details.
Good morning, Commissioners. Mark O'Brien, Strategic Financial Planning, and with me today is Craig Koontz, Senior Analyst. So today we're here in response to existing board resolutions 14-13878 and 15-13950, which requires quarterly updates to the board related to the district's financial results and financial policies, and associated newly approved updated business line resolution policy 17-14124. Which identifies, again, financial policy associated with the various business line segments, water, wastewater, integrated electric, fiber in particular. I would also note that this also serves, associated with the board's balanced scorecard objectives related to maintaining strong financial stewardship. And also note that this presentation incorporates the district's banking and investment policy requirements, again, providing quarterly investment updates and associated with those metrics and requirements. I'll just provide a quick overview of the what we're going to cover today. I'm going to hand this off to Craig. He's taken lead on providing this presentation as well as providing all the backup research and review for the Q2 results. I would note that there's no action required from the board today. This is simply an update in association with those existing policies. And I would also note that we have additional details in the appendix. We won't be reviewing that today unless there are questions, but just to identify that additional context does exist. Craig's going to go over the high-level financial highlights, focusing on just the year-to-date Q2 results, also looking at the annual forecast numbers as of Q2, and then looking at the extended five-year forecast in relationship primarily to those business line financial metrics the district has established, and then just kind of summarize the key messages for the Q2 results. So with that, I'll turn it over to Craig.
Thanks, Mark. Good morning, Commissioners. I'd like to start off by just saying that for the most part, the Q2 results are very similar to the Q1 results. One of the big items was the Alcoa deferred contract payment, which was about $7 million of cash received, and of that, $3 million was incorporated into our bottom line. And you'll see that as an impact. Year-to-date results, $57.1 million, which is about $11.5 million better than budget. As of Q1, it was $6.5 million better than budget. So that increase in large part is due to that recognition of the Alcoa deferred contract payment. Forecasted to be about $10 million better than budget at $95.1 million. And it's through the discussions you've heard earlier, it's a combination of higher revenues, a lot from the retail segment due to higher usage, the retail customers, also some of the cost-based contracts like the Alcoa contract revenue we've recognized, and some lower operating costs have contributed to those results. Our 2017 financial metrics are all meeting their targets. Financial liquidity at $377 million, days cash on hand at 582, rate of return at 8.4%, debt ratio at 37.8%. I will notice the target on the debt ratio was less than 45% for 2017, and the overall target was less than 35 by 2019. As of the Q2 forecast, the 2019 forecast for debt ratio was at 26.8%, so we're exceeding that expectation by quite a bit, and the debt service coverage at 3.21. So we recommend continuing our strategic goals of reinvesting in assets, people, reducing debt, and continuing the public power benefit. Move on to the revenue highlights. as Greg and his group mentioned earlier, the net wholesale revenue. Now, this doesn't include the real-time agreement, but this is just the net wholesale revenue component. Are $1 million above budget year-to-date, and the annual forecast for net wholesale revenue is $115.5 million versus the $114.1 million. And as mentioned earlier, that's a combination of increased generation due to the higher runoff, but also the retail energy usage is 113% of budget year-to-date. We also, in that number, we've got the Alcoa surplus, the credit pool that was retained in Q1 of about $1.8 million is in that number. And as mentioned earlier, the hedging program, even though the prices have dropped from where we were budgeting, the flat mid-sea prices, the hedging program, we're so fully hedged in the year, the impacts of those lower prices aren't really impacting the net wholesale revenue. On the hydro long-term contract revenue, year-to-date results are about $1 million below budget. And that's pretty much a combination of our costs year-to-date from the hydro costs are about 94% year-to-date. But our forecast is expected to be in line with budget, roughly $124.5 million versus $124.6 million. And that's because those forecasted hydro costs are expected to catch up to budget. And it's actually forecasted to be about 101% for the year. So as the year progresses, the anticipation is that we'll catch up with the costs. In addition, our plus contract charges are a little less than budget year to date, but those are expected to be at about 97% by the end of the year. Service revenue, as mentioned earlier, we're at $3.1 million above budget, and that's due to the colder winter and the high retail usage. As of Q1, we were about $2.5 million above budget, and those that incremental benefit is going to basically maintain within our forecast, as we anticipate to be about $3.4 million above budget for the year. And as mentioned, it was due mostly to the higher retail usage and the colder than normal winter. Other operating revenue are about $3.3 million above budget. As I mentioned at the introduction, $3 million of that is basically attributed to the Alcoa contract deferral payment. And that's pretty much in alignment with, everything else is pretty much in alignment with the budget. Operating expenses are about $4.3 million below budget, but they're forecasted to come back a little bit to be within about $2 million of budget by the end of the year. The main drivers of that are electric transmission is about 82% of year-to-date, but that's anticipated to get to within about 93 to 94% by the year-end. And as I mentioned, the hydro operation and maintenance is about 86% of budget year-to-date, but that's expected to be about 99% by the end of the year. Non-operating expenses, I'll pause on this for just a second. This is about $1.2 million better than budget. And the main contributor is our line extensions. And I just like to put a plug into the business intelligence work as we leverage that work to look at the year-to-date counts for line extensions. We're about 140 year-to-date versus 104 prior year-to-date. So leveraging the information that we got from the business intelligence effort to our retail services, we were able to get that information. So that's a plug to those who worked on that effort. Looking at our financial highlights, cost per unit, Lindsay mentioned some of this earlier. Our fully loaded cost per average kWh is a little bit higher than budget. It's primarily two things. One is the fact that due to the higher retail usage, we have higher taxes, so those are driving up our costs. But that's offset in the revenue component, which isn't a part of this calculation. And also, the way this is calculated is due to the retail usage is up, the costs are higher due to a normalized comparison, the numerator versus the denominator calculation. As you can see down below, the hydro cost per average megawatt is better than budget. Operating expenses year-to-date reach are 98%, Rock Island 89%, and Lake Chelan at 90%. And as I mentioned earlier, those costs are anticipated to get closer to the budget, and the forecasted Rocky Reach would be is at 94%, Rock Island is 102%, and Lake Chelan is 101%. Again, Lindsay mentioned this earlier, water cost per 1,000 gallons is higher than budget, and that's pretty much due to those unplanned pump repairs that she mentioned. Currently, the operating expenses are 103% of budget, and it's forecasted to be about 100% of budget. Lindsay mentioned this as well. Wastewater costs are a little higher than budget, and that's due primarily to the reclassification of that Dryden pipeline from a capital expenditure deferred cost to an O&M expenditure. So their operating expenses are 152% of budget. I will note that that 152% of budget is roughly $173,000, just to put that in context. And they're forecasted to be about 130% of budget at the end of the year. And the fiber annual cost per premise, this is a rolling 12. And this is due to maintenance support contract timing and some additional crew maintenance and O&M. So as the year continues to roll on, that will get more in line because the forecasted costs are about 98% of budget.
Yeah, question, Craig, on the water cost and the rebuilding of the pumps. Adequate reserves to cover that?
Currently, yes. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Financial highlights, balance sheet, and Commissioner Bozal, we'll get on to the business line financial metrics towards the end.
Thank you.
More information. Capital expenditures are below budget. We've expended about $26.1 million versus a budget of $49.6 year-to-date. That's roughly 53%. But I will note that the forecasted results are expected to be above budget by about $2 million, $98 million versus $96 million. And so right now we're just monitoring that. It's still relatively early in the year, and significant adjustments can change. We got some big ticket items out there. Some of the individual projects I'll go over. Mostly it's Rock Island modernization B5, 6, 7, and 8. Distribution shared fleet, $102 million was shifted to 2018 from 2017. And the B-Pond to G-Pond project and fiber was completed. And about $5 million, about $500,000 adjustment to the forecast from Q1. So taking all that in consideration on the capital, cash balances is forecasted to decrease about $18 million in 2017. And our debt balance is expected to decrease $52 million in 2017. This is looking at the bottom line results. Again, I'll just briefly go over that. Service revenue, as I mentioned earlier, is driven mostly by the higher retail usage. Energy resources net wholesale revenue, that's a little bit above budget, was mentioned earlier. Hydro long-term contract revenue, that's expected to get right back in line as we ramp up some expenditures and get closer to budget. Other operating revenue, that's where that $3 million of the COA recognition of the contract deferred payment is showing up. Other operating expenses, again, will get right in line with budget, and depreciation and taxes is right in line with budget. And non-operating expenses is pretty much in line with budget. I'll pause there in case there's any questions. Business line, bottom line results. Again, cost-based activity of the integrated electric system. This is where that $3 million is being recognized again. Market-based activity. This is where $1.8 million of the Alcoa credit pool premiums back in Q1 was recognized. Again, retail activity, the loss is a little bit less due to the increase in retail usage and the revenue associated with that. Another activity is right in line with budget. So the integrated electric is about 110% of budget. Fiber and telecom, that's forecast is greater than budget. That's due in large part to internal services. There was 21 dark fiber connections. Those were done in that was shown in Q1. That was for some security work at the hydros. In addition, there was some depreciation estimate refinements that lowered the depreciation expense a little bit in the 2017 budget, or forecast, excuse me. Water is pretty much right in line with budget, and I mean, it's $100,000, and that's, again, there were some substantial pump repairs that were done. And wastewater, again, you can see the impacts associated with that Dryden replacement from capital to O&M causing a larger loss as it was on the balance sheet. Now it's on the income statement. Looking at capital expenditures, I'll just highlight a couple. Network transmission is at 41%. It's looking to be at 86%. It's going to remain a little bit below budget, and that's primarily due to the Andrew York and Anderson Canyon line relocate. It was a budget of $1.1 million in 2017, and it looks like the forecast is about $300,000. That's a project that's going to continue to occur into 2018 and 2019. Rock Island is at 50% of budget year-to-date, and it's looking to be at about 111% of budget. I'd like to highlight that on the hydros, we take the capital forecast and we adjust it down by 15%. We plan an 85% spending level. So there's a forecasted adjustment. That forecast adjustment has been reduced as we think we're going to, as we're going to plan to spend what we were originally thinking we were going to spend. And mostly the big ticket items on that one are the U1, U8 governor controls and the B5, 6, 7, and 8 modernization. And then Lake Chelan, that's at 9% of budget, and that's looking to be at 73% at the year end. That's due to the A1, A2, 11 kV breakers. Those were budgeted for about $1 million, and they're going to come in about $500,000, which is that variance between the budget forecast.
So, in anticipation of being at 101% of budget on capital expenditures, will we be seeing a budget extension or whatever the term is you use at some point?
Yeah, Commissioner Smith, what we'll do is we'll continue to monitor that. And in the event that those expectations remain the same, sometime, give or take, before or after Q3, we'll come to the board as needed to get revisions, adjusting that capital budget back to the original estimates and taking away that discounting that we did initially. Again, but we'll target that probably in that September-October time frame once we get close enough to ensure that it's really required at that point.
So. It's so close, yeah.
Yeah. It really is only a couple percent. It's a large capital budget overall, and so we don't want to add to it unless it makes sense later in the year.
Any other questions? Okay, this is looking at year-to-date cash flow. Bottom line results year-to-date were about $57 million, and we add back our non-cash items of depreciation, which is about $23 million, and that gives us basically what we call our funds from operations of about $80 million. Capital project expenditures, net of the contributions we receive in aid, is about $23 million. Our net debt reductions through Q2 were about $22 million. I will note that we also did an accelerated debt payment July 1st of about $29 million for a couple bonds outstanding. And this is where we also have the Alcoa deferral payment of about $7 million, with $3 million that was recognized in our bottom line, so another additional $4 million of cash. And then we have some other miscellaneous accounts receivable, accounts payable, inventory adjustments to the balance sheet, which accounts for $7 million. So through Q2, we added about $24 million of cash. And you can see that we started the year at $483. We added $24 million, and our cash and investments at the end of Q2 were $507
million. And one thing I would add here is related to the net debt reductions. This is as of Q2, as of June 30th. We actually did finalize the debt reduction payments the first part of July. And so that overall $52 million target was basically completed early in July, just not represented in these numbers. And again, one of the reasons why we do expect cash to actually decline throughout the year, even though we're currently have added $24 million to our reserves to date.
Looking at our cash and investment balances, we'll note that next quarter update, you will see the board designated funds for the facilities plans that were allocated, the $20 million. Since that was done post Q2, we're not reflecting it in these reports. But of that $507 million, our unrestricted funds of $353 million, we have restricted DRC, CRC funds available for hydro capital and debt of $76 million. So our total liquidity is $429 million. We have some other restricted bond reserve funds of $44 million, some power contract deposits of $23 million, and our self-insurance and a few other little minor restricted funds of about $11 million, which makes up our total cash and investments of $507 million. Looking at our quarterly reporting requirement for financial policies for the next 5 years, we are meeting all of our targets. I would note that under the unusual case out in 2021, we are assuming some external debt financing to maintain liquidity targets. Not much, but about $9 to $10 million of net debt external financing. All of our metrics under the expected case are being met and remain relatively strong. And again, this is that 26.8% debt ratio in 2019 where we're targeting less than 35%. I'll pause there in case there's any questions on those metrics. looking onto the quarterly reporting requirements. So hopefully this will help answer your question about adequate reserves, Commissioner Bowles. Water system has 3.4 million of reserves as of 2017 forecast, which is a target of 1.25 million. I will note that in 2021, it is not forecasted to meet its metric of 1.25, but the action plan to address this are currently going on within the business planning cycle for the 2018 to 2022 business planning process.
And I would add to that, as part of the recently approved business land financial policies that were reviewed and updated earlier this year, that was one of the key components where future funding of capital beyond the initial period through 2019 was going to be established and discussed during those phases. So as funding needs were identified, rather than assume full funding as we did in the through the 2019 time frame for capital, that would be discussed and in that business planning process and brought to the board if any direction or action was needed.
And I will note that there you've heard about the new retail electric metrics that have been developed. Those will be added to the future quarterly presentations. We're in the process of implementing those metrics into the reporting environment.
I have a question. Can we go back just one slide?
Yes,
page 15. Under debt ratio expected in 2020, if we stopped at that point, didn't pay down any debt beyond the 24%, how much money are we talking about between 2020 and 2021? Would that be, would that fill the $10 million gap on liquidity?
The mechanics of how the forecast works is in the event that we forecast liquidity to drop below any targeted levels, the 175 min or calculated amount, we automatically incorporate the assumption of external financing. And so these numbers would always represent on the debt leverage ratio what is needed to maintain that cash reserve level. Currently, right now, on the expected case, I believe it's toward the end of 2022, start of 2023 is when we're currently expecting our reserves to fall below the required level on liquidity. And so that would trigger the assumption that we would get some external financing in the modeling, which would, again, drive that debt ratio up. I would also note that there's a continuation of debt payments through the existing bonds that we have. And so as those payments are made, we may take on some additional debt, but for the most part, we expect the debt levels to stay relatively stable. So we may need to borrow some. We may need to defer some retirements, would be another option. But overall, that forecast is looking to maintain that overall debt ratio of that 20% plus or minus.
And this is Kelly Boyd, CFO. I wanted to add to Mark's comments, too. In that time frame, the 2020 and beyond, we have only minimal accelerated debt payments planned. And some of that's just timing of paying a little bit ahead of time for a year-end coverage ratio. So it's not paying down additional. It's just changing the pace at which we pay them. So just in kind of that thinking, our accelerated debt payments really do curtail after about 2019. We make our scheduled debt reduction payments after that. But your question is what we consider each time we make an accelerated debt payment. And when we talk about our plan of finance each year, because we do want to look forward and make sure that we're not doing something now that we would have changed our mind on by looking over the longer term. So we do consider that each time of whether we still think our plan is the right plan to execute. So currently, it still pencils out that this is the right plan. But based on how some of the capital planning, et cetera, could turn out, that plan really could change. So I did want to just assure the board that that is the type of thing we look to, and those are the types of decisions we would recommend to the board as we get closer to those time frames if we need to change our plan.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, and just for a point of reference, in regards to the debt outstanding in 2017, if under expected conditions, it's $537 million, and in 2020, it's $331 million. Just to put that in context, we've paid down over $200 million of debt in that time period.
Right, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking at the quarterly investment report, Everything is green. I will note that the 2017 Q2 yield fell slightly from 1.67 to 1.66, and that's due to the holding the cash right at the end of the quarter so we can make those July 1st payments of about $29 million of our accelerated debt payment. Everything's green. Any questions on this slide? All right, so key messages. The results are better than budget, and we're looking to be about $10 million better than budget for the year on the bottom line. As mentioned, it's a combination of revenue from colder weather, lower costs, and some leveraging our contracts, the benefits of the long-term cost-plus contracts. The bottom line forecast is expected to decline from about $95 million in 2017 to about $43 million in 2021, and that's mostly driven due to the decline in the wholesale market prices. And our cash is continuing to decline a little bit due to our reinvestment in our assets, but remain relatively strong. So we recommend staying the course with the strategic goals. And we'll continue. Well, we have reduced our debt by about $52 million in 2017. That was done in July. And we'll achieve the debt ratio by 2019. Continue with the public power benefit. And I'll open that up to any questions or comments.
Good report.
Very informative. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Second quarter major projects, contracts, project revisions.
Yes.
Morning, Commissioners. Dave Nelson, Business Advisor for Generation and Transmission. Got three reports for you as part of our quarterly reporting. Do you have those in front of you?
Not yet.
Not yet. They're coming. I would apologize. The print is getting a little small on these, but I see we all have our glasses on this morning, so hopefully we're okay. The first page is the active major capital projects, and those include capital projects with the budget, a total project budget of $2 million or greater. And on this report, there's just a number of schedule variances that are reflected with the red circles with a little white X in it. And most of those you saw in previous last quarter's report. They're still reflected here the same way. So the first one is the V6 modernization delay. That was reflected in last quarter's information. I would note on the next few projects, the V1 through 4 modernization projects at Powerhouse 1, you will be having a presentation and some discussion about the path forward on those, which could change the budgets for those projects, and that is not reflected in these numbers. This is the current existing budget. The next one down, the Eniac Park upgrades, that was discussed with the board last quarter. The next one is the Rocky Reach Headworks gantry crane. Schedule variance of moving it back from May to November. The crane itself is actually completed and in service as of middle of July or so. The old crane will be taken down, and the spot they need to use will interfere with some of the visitor center activities, and so we want to wait until after the visitor center closes to remove that crane. But the existing crane's in service, the new crane. The Rocky Reach Bridge cranes is the next one that was discussed with the board last quarter, as was the security infrastructure and the fleet distribution variances. Any questions on that first page? Okay, the next couple pages are the capital project budget revisions that occurred during the second quarter. Group these by areas. Utility services, overall about an $83,000 revision there. In the transmission area, a couple of larger revisions. One was for the Andrew York to Anderson Canyon number 3 facilities remediation, and that revision was done to be able to move some of those poles off of the slope of the railroad to give us better access in the future. And then at the bottom of that one, the Rocky Reach switchyard, we chose to do a different panel We have a number of projects going on over years in the Rocky Beach Switchyard. We had a different panel scheduled for about $200,000 to be done this year, and we realized the sequencing wasn't right, so we deferred that one to 2018, and we're doing this panel in 2017. And in the fiber, the first section is sort of split into two, public power benefit. There's a number of budget revisions here netting out to zero for that. And the key point there is the Manson fiber distribution tower has been delayed into 2018 due to some NESC scheduling. So the design and engineering was delayed because of that. Will be planned for design and engineering in 2018. And so those funds were redistributed to other projects. Below that, there was a $185,000 adjustment to the distribution enhancements there, and this was partially offset by some other changes, and that was caused by crew labor and materials being underestimated on that particular project. In the hydro areas, we had the Rocky Reach Fishway dewatering pumps. It was a project we've had in our forecast for some time, and we really felt like it needed to get done this year. It's critical in being able to dewater the adult fishway, and so we want to do that project. The engineers felt it was important to do it now. Small revision to the fiber and telecom vehicles budget, and on the next page, facilities adjustment for some site preparation costs, and then in IT, a net zero adjustment, two reductions to allow for the Skype for Business project to be established and move forward. Any questions on the budget revisions for the quarter? Okay, on the next three pages are active contracts greater than $1 million and just highlights the new contracts for the quarter. So the first one is they're highlighted in green is Andritz. This is was approved by the board at the end of 2016, and the purchase contract was established this last quarter for that project. On the next page, we had four task authorizations under an existing $5 million consulting agreement with Stantec Consulting. Those were for various engineering design projects. And then on the last page, we had two task authorizations under a $1.5 million not to exceed agreement with Eureka Engineering, and those were for inspections on cranes. So that's it, unless there's any questions. Oh, I would note that there's we've been attaching a report each quarter for the contracts that were negotiated, that we needed to negotiate if we didn't receive bids or to follow up on those, and there weren't any this quarter, so there is no report attached associated with those negotiated contracts.
Thank you. Okay. Section Land Water Reserve.
Correct. Marcy Clements, Dan Howler from Aspect Consulting, and Trevor Hutton from the Department of Ecology are going to provide us an update on discussions between Ecology and the district resulting in a proposed agreement.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name again is Marcy Clement. I am happy to introduce two folks who will help talk and discuss a little bit more about this, but without them, we wouldn't be where we are today with all of their assistance working collaboratively on this project. Trevor Hutton with Department of Ecology. He's the Water Resources Program Section Manager. And Dan Haller with Aspect Consulting. He's assisted the district. He is an engineer with Aspect Consulting. Why we're here today is to provide an update on the discussions between Ecology and the district resulting in proposed agreements on the following. We've established a methodology for estimating quantities in the Lake Chelan Water Reserve. We've clarified the regulatory process for allocating water rights from the reserve, and we've additionally created an annual process to review and account for water allocated. We'll also discuss briefly the proposed schedule for the next steps. There is no action requested today. Our high-level objectives as we've gone through this process were to maintain the district's commitment to allow up to 65,000 acre-feet of water per year for other uses as administered by Department of Ecology out of this Lake Chelan Water Reserve, to protect the district's hydropower water right, and to ensure compliance with current laws and policies. Dan Haller will explain a little bit more about the reserve itself, as well as the specifics on the agreements that we have worked with Ecology on.
Well, good morning. When the district's predecessor applied back in 1925 for a water right, the Department of Ecology basically gave all the water in the Lake Chelan Basin to the district for its hydropower uses, with the exception of 33,000 acre-feet of water that would be reserved for other uses. That was what initially formed the quote-unquote Lake Chelan Reserve. However, there was some ambiguity around that number and what it all covered, which came to a head in some litigation that the PUD and Ecology went through in 1992, which then further clarified and extended the reserve to some additional quantities. So what you see here is this 33,000 acre-feet, which was intended to cover essentially new uses after 1925. There was an additional 12,000 acre-feet that was supposed to capture uses in existence as of 1925. And then the district allowed for an additional 20,000 acre-feet for new growth. So that if you add all those up, that totals 65,000 acre-feet. So what's an acre-foot of water? An acre-foot of water is a common water measure for irrigated land. For example, a typical pasture, lawn, or orchard might use about 3 acre-feet per acre. A typical house might use between a half and 1 acre-foot of water. It's the metric by which water rights are quantified, and water is bought and sold and transferred in Washington. So this slide describes the details of the math that we've been negotiating with the Department of Ecology and working hard through their records to understand. So if you start with the 65,000 acre-foot number, and then you take out the 12,000 acre-feet that was in existence as of 1925 when the district received its water rights, and then if you look over the next 90 years at the water rights that Department of Ecology issued, that's about 41,723 acre-feet of water, which leaves you with 11,277 acre-feet of water. This is a number that has been independently verified by several sources, including ourselves and the county's contractor, RH2. In that RH2 report, they recommended a couple areas for further inquiry and study. One was, how should we be evaluating overlapping water rights? Sometimes a single piece of property will have several water rights stacked up on one another, and they'll have some interrelationships that requires a right-by-right evaluation to understand. Department of Ecology did that as part of this evaluation, which is what this 489 acre-feet adjustment reflects. And then finally, claims represent water rights, water right documents that may or may not be valid when a future adjudication of the basin occurs. And so we had to come up with some reasonable estimate for how much those claims represent. And 5,500 acre-feet was the amount that we think is a reasonable quantity associated with those. So if you do all that math, you come up with 5,288 acre-feet remaining in the reserve that can be still permitted. So I've got a couple more slides on process, and then Trevor's going to talk about that 5,288 number. So what did we do, and what action will be coming before the board in the future? Is, number one, we agreed on the methodology and the reporting process for this. Right now, the 1992 agreement on which this is all based doesn't describe a lot of the how. And so what we really focused on is, how can we make sure that we have a robust accounting and make sure that we know what the number is at any given time. We also wanted to make sure that the number that we're telling the public is reasonable and conservative. In other words, we don't want it to go down. It may go up, but we had to make a lot of assumptions, and we made those in a way that would be conservative. We agreed to include groundwater in the Lake Chelan Reserve accounting. The 1992 agreement was silent on this, so it could have been interpreted a couple different ways. It was more protective of the district's rights to include groundwater, and it was more helpful to Ecology in the county to make sure that groundwater had a solid place in permitting moving forward. Number four, the agreement also wasn't really clear about the Lake Chelan water basin, and so we have a map and a legal description of that that will move forward. And Ecology has agreed to track this and report to the district annually, and also to publish those results on its website so that we have clear public accountability on how this will all work. And then I'll turn it over to Trevor.
So then the question is, we've done all this analysis and we've arrived at this quantity that, that we believe is still out there for us to do something with. And Ecology is going to be working going forward with, you know, once we have all these procedural steps in place, we'll be working with the county on a coordinated cost reimbursement project similar to has been done in the Wenatchee Basin. It's a statutory process where we're allowed to contract out some of Ecology's work to state-approved contractors. It is a program that's paid for on a voluntary basis by applicants in the basin. So there are currently around 150 existing applications in the Lake Chelan Basin. And ultimately, this is a process that allows Ecology to gain some efficiency by having the process done by contractors, but ultimately comes back to Ecology for final decision. We retain that ability to approve or deny based on the legal framework of those specific applications.
And finally, our next steps. Oops, there we go. Our next public session, where we will come with the resolution to approve the amendment number one to the 92 agreement and the memorandum of understanding with Ecology, which was what Dan had outlined previously. And Ecology will have a public outreach via focus sheet around the time period of September 6th through the 13th. There also will be a meeting on September 13th with the Watershed Planning Unit, which is up in Chelan, and it's a group of folks that's led by the county and works on all of the watershed planning updates in conjunction with Department of Ecology, and the district attends those meetings. There'll probably be a kickoff similar to this to present all of the information.
Commissioners, any questions?
Commissioners, if I might, I'd just like to extend my personal thanks and appreciation to both our internal staff and team and Ecology's team and our stakeholders out there that have been, I think, interested in this for some time. Dan and Sarah Mack, District's Council for Water Rights, along with Marcy, Karen Wiggum internally, and Michelle Smith, have just done an exceptional job on very difficult and detailed analysis. Trevor and his team have been engaged in that all along the way cooperatively. It's taken us a long time to get here, but in the end, I think we land in the right place with some good clarity to an agreement, oddly, that we reached collaboratively when last time we reached it through litigation and resolution that way by settlement. So I'm just really appreciative. This has been a long haul. The hope I think of this, I always come back to the outcome, the desired outcome for me, not only is to update the agreements and deal with a lot of the legalities and the minor details, but at the end of the day, to provide a framework where that community up there at Lake Chelan, to include all of the stakeholders, the county, the district, Ecology, the city, others, would be able to have a current and annually refreshed, at least, picture of the state of the reserve, so that any adjustments or planning that needs to be done can be done ahead of time with foresight, instead of in an emergency environment where sometimes we have heated discussions and not always make the best decisions. So I think this is a huge win-win-win-win for everyone, and I just want to say thanks to all of you.
Just and I'd like to support that. My understanding is there's 150 applications for some of that remaining water. Is there any estimate in terms of what that volume is?
So the existing applications, they do sum to quite a bit higher than we have left in the reserve. But you know, in my mind, there's still a big question mark as to which applications will still be acted on and not.
Okay.
I can draw some analogs to previous programs that have been run, like the Wenatchee programs that the Office of Columbia River has run. where in many cases, a lot of these applications, by the nature of the fact that they've sat around for so many years, may not reflect current demand. And so we will have to go through a process of refining which applications are still valid and on the books and accurate.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Any additional questions or comments?
I would just like to comment from Ecology's perspective. For your benefit, it has been a great opportunity and collaborative working environment with the PUD here. It's been, you know, Marcy and the team here at Chelan PUD has been great to work with. This is a really important project, I think, for Ecology, for the PUD, for the community of Chelan. And we're excited to see where this takes us and to continue having a good working relationship as we move forward.
Thank you, Trevor. You as well.
Thank you all.
Very
thank
much.
You.
Thank you. Thank you very much. B1 to B4 rehab.
B1 to B4 rehab. The board had previously approved a budget for the B1 to B4 rehab, and through lessons learned and experience, it was contemplated that as they went through the assessment of the equipment, that they would find things that caused us to change our approach in some areas. And so Kirk and Brett are going to walk us through that. And I will note that Brett had told us that he works better under pressure. And so he's got 20 minutes to cover a lot of material.
And I think that first caricature was in one of our offices up until a few days ago. Yep.
Good morning, Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. With me is Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management. Today, we're going to present to you an assessment, the results of an assessment of several components that were reviewed as part of the B1 through 4 refurbishment scope. You might recall we asked the board to come in right before the end of the year for a special meeting to award the contract for B1 through 4 due to the opportunity to save some additional dollars by awarding that in 2016. Well, there's been a tremendous amount of work that's gone on to get to this point today from the project team in looking at modernizing B1 through 4. And we have a recommendation today to include some additional components in the scope of replacement rather than repair. And Brett will walk through that analysis. Before he does that, I just would like to just share that there is a contract milestone. This was actually contemplated in the contract to begin with. The contract was bid with this possibility in mind, so there were prices included for these components if we chose to replace them rather than repair them. And there was a milestone in that contract, which happens to be August 15th, at which a decision to be made to replace those components rather than repair them, and that could be done with the guaranteed pricing in the contract, as well as without an impact to the schedule. So that's why we're here today with a recommendation, and we're requesting consideration of a resolution with a budget revision this afternoon to meet that milestone. With that, I'll turn it over to Brett.
Good morning. I'm Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management. And today we want to talk about assessment of reuse of equipment for B1 to B4. The purpose of this is to review our finite element analysis and our current condition of components proposed for reuse, to review a recommendation to exercise the existing contract options to replace some of the components. And then we'll have available, if the board would like to act on, a budget revision and a field work order that's combined in a single resolution for some of these new items. So the background, the contract proposed to refurbish components if the finite element analysis, or this FEA, and condition assessment showed that the components could operate for another 50-year design life. And so this is a list of all the items that are in the contract that the contractor is to do FEA work on. The color coding kind of means something. So the green ones are all the items that we looked at through FEA, some of them through condition assessment, and they look fine. And then the others, the red and the blue, are items that we're going to talk about today.
So we've gotten through the FEA analysis of on about 85% of the components. So that last 15% was one of the items here in black. So the gate ring, gate arms are yet left to do. So some of the components we found had less than a 50-year fatigue life remaining, but also they had stresses from the FEA that indicated that they might have an issue during the operation. And so those components were the rotor pole L bracket during the case of a runaway unit, generator shaft keyway connections at a maximum output. And so for propeller units, they pretty much run at maximum output because that's their peak efficiency. So that's pretty important. And then also on the wicket gate body and stems, at the maximum head, we saw some stress issues. And then again, the gate ring, we haven't finished that one yet. So here's a picture, if you see in the caption, from June 1931. And so this is the rotor. It's got the poles all installed. So these were all probably manufactured in about 1930. There's 72 of these poles, and they're completely original on B1 to B4. If you remove the pole here in the foreground on the left, that's the assembled pole. Behind it is the winding that's been removed from the pole body that is shown on the right. And then that pole body has some components that we're going to talk about. The dovetail, the rivets, and then here's that L bracket. So this is a picture that's representing different stresses in this L bracket component. And so what Andritz did when they analyzed this is they identified these areas with these numbers of 68 and 41. So these are quite a bit higher than the allowable stress. And this thing would actually plastically deform, probably fail, and then those poles would be subject to coming off or coming in contact with the stator. We also looked at the stress of this, what we call a dovetail connection, but the stresses in this component looked to be okay. They were under the allowables. The colors don't necessarily mean it's good or bad. It's just a range. So red is the highest stress. Blue is the lowest stress on that component. It doesn't necessarily mean it's overstressed or understressed. So we looked at the two primary components. The L bracket looks like it's overstressed. And the dovetail arrangement looks like it's okay. So we do two things. One is we look at stresses in the components. They didn't have these tools back in the day. And the other thing that we look at is we do condition assessment. So we want to actually validate whether or not we've got significant wear or maybe cracks or other things in components that we don't want to reuse. We don't know whether the poles ever went into runaway or not. Since I've been here, we don't have a recorder that we have, so we wanted to look at these. So we installed head gates. We had our crews remove six of the poles, and we actually found some physical damage. So there are two large rivets that hold on that L bracket, so we saw about 10% of them saw cracks. Maybe that happened during installation. We're not for sure, but we did see also about 10% that are loose, not holding that L bracket on very tightly. And then also in the dovetail area, we found a number of cracks. So these cracks don't mean it's going to imminently fail, but if that propagates all the way across to the other side, then that gets to be a concern. So there is some life left, but we don't think there's a life left for another 50 years. We looked at the winding. So in this, you see the nice copper color. In the previous photos, it was dark because it was insulated, covered with paint. So we had two poles sent off, had all the insulation stripped off. We analyzed the copper to make sure there wasn't any degradation, that it was of a fairly high-quality copper for good efficiency. It looks like it is good copper. It's in good shape. There's not corrosion. It's not broken, cracked, or brittle. So that looks like that part of the could be reused. So from the FEA and condition assessment, we came up with a recommendation of what we should do with that system. So the contract already had the option to refurbish the poles. So for each unit, that contract price was $500,000. The contract also had the option for all new for a contract added price of $1.15 million. So the total cost of a new pole is $1.65. Because of the cracks, because of the potential overstress at runaway in the L bracket, engineering is recommending a new pole body, but reusing the winding. So this is a little bit in between what we got pricing on, because we think we can save about $400,000 if we go ahead and reuse that winding again. So that's what the recommendation would be for that component. The next one's the generator shaft. And I'm going to show you two slides. Yeah.
On that winding, so they, that's that copper right there. So that is the original. Right?
That is all original, yes.
And then how do they assess whether that is it visual inspection or is that, how is that interpreted?
Sure. So they do a visual to look for any cracks or deformations or waviness in there, but they also can test it. So they can do several electrical tests on it to determine what its conductivity is, to figure out how pure it is and how much resistance is within the copper. Different grades of copper will have different resistance values. This next component, the generator shaft, I'm going to show some color stress plots of two areas. One is right in this area here where there's kind of a large radius. This is the keyway that some large tapered keys are installed on each side of the shaft to connect it to the rotor. So as the shaft turns, as it's connected to the propeller, then that causes the rotor to turn. So kind of like on a lawnmower between the blade and the shaft of the engine. So, and then the other one is, we call it the axial thrust. So there's a large ring that goes in here, and that actually carries the weight of the runner, and that sits on a bearing. And as it rotates, so that carries the weight of the machine. So
Brent, how big is that keyway? Just give a context for how big that shaft.
So the shaft I think is about 34 inches in diameter, and then so this keyway is about 2.5 inches tall, and then about 1.25 inches
yeah.
deep.
I just wanted to get an idea how big that was.
And so. This is a blown-up area showing the stress in that radius area. And so, again, under one of our load cases, so the load cases are different operating conditions. It might be at maximum head, lowest head, highest output, low output, etc. On the case of where it's running at about max output, which is where these will normally run, we see that it's overstressed in this area here. So in this case, these yellow, orange, red colors are showing here at the bottom. We got stresses of 51,000 PSI, but the allowable is 24,000. So they see overstress in this area. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to fail, but probably what happens locally is you get some deformation of that keyway. So instead of being a nice vertical, true angles, it's probably over time deformed. So that was the stress analysis. And here was the same thing that they saw for the axial thrust keyway. So very high loads there at max output. So what we ventured to do was to go try to have a look at this to see whether the FEA was showing some items, showing some signs. And so we started to go look at this with our crews, put head gates in, started the disassembly process. Unfortunately, we had to stop due to some issues we had with other units there, B9 and B8. So we needed to pull head gates and stop logs and move to other units. So we weren't able to actually pull the shaft, pull the keys to see what deformation is. It might be happening there. So we're kind of at a point in time where we need to make a decision on that component. It looks like there's some overstress that can be going on, so that probably means that those items aren't perfect and will need some work if we were to use them. Also, Andritz is waiting for our decision on what we want to do with that because they need to finish the rotor design. They're saying that they would design it with a different type of keyway system than what was designed before. And so that's where we're at with that decision right now. So in the contract for about $50,000, they take the shaft out for each unit. They disassemble it. They clean it. They do NDE, perform dimensional inspection. The contract has an option for all new shafts for $250,000 each. Looking at the stress analysis, looking at the condition that we could get to without pulling the keys, we probably think there's about a 90% chance that those keyways are going to need some remedial work. So we'll have to put it in a lathe. We'll have to do some machining work to make those surfaces true again to match with the new rotor. So again, we're trying to evaluate, should we buy new? Should we try to use old? we said, well, probably 90% chance we're going to have to spend some money refurbishing it. Also, there's probably a chance that there's some cracks we find on it that we need to do some repair work. We think that's possible. We think it's a shaft material that we can do some minor repairs, put a value to that, and then looked at the risk of maybe whether a shaft might end up not being reusable. So we're using that as kind of some input to a financial analysis. So with the information we had, we kind of made a recommendation that it probably looks like it's best at this point to go ahead and purchase new shafts. Also, then this money that we'd be spending doing remedial work could be applied to something that would have at least 50 years more life. Our third component was the wicket gate analysis. And so this is the complete circle with all the wicket gates together and closed. You can see the upper stem sticking up there. There's 20 of those total, and there's a stem at the bottom. And so from the finite element analysis, what we see and what we anticipated, we found this at Rocky Reach as well, is real high stresses around the stem area. So over time, what you'd see is you probably see bending of stems to shafts, and if we reuse those, we would need some work. At Rocky Reach, we're actually taking the stems and we're machining a larger radius into those to reduce the stress concentration because it's a real sharp angle right now. And we haven't done that analysis yet to see how much of a radius or it would work, because we were trying to decide whether we would pay Andritz extra to do that, or if we were going to buy new, we wouldn't need to pay extra for extra analysis. So our wicket gates, again, we were hoping that we could go do some more investigation on wicket gates. It requires the units to be dewatered. So at Rock Island, those head gates are in other units right now, so we haven't gotten to go in to actually do any more detailed assessment. But we do have some information. From 2009 to 2012, we had all the wicket gates out on B4, B3, and B1. And so at that time, we did inspections of those. And on those units, we only had a couple of wicket gates that had some bent stems on them that we needed to do refurbishment work, and we did that. However, B2 in our 2014-15 time frame, 14 of the 20 needed work done on those stems. And so this could be similar to what we saw with the blades, is 4, 3, and 1 back in 2009 through 12. We didn't see any cracks. And then B2 in 2014, cracks everywhere. We went back and looked at B4, 3, and 1. They had cracks everywhere due to corrosion stress cracking. So we think we're seeing the effects of time. It could be that because these wicket gates are in the water, we could start seeing more impacts as we did on B2. So we spent about $350,000 on B2 back in 14-15 doing the repairs. So for the wicket gates in the contract now, for $475,000, they get disassembled, cleaned, NDE, dimensional check, and then we included a certain amount of pre-assumed work that would need to be done to that. But any cracks or severely bent sleeves would be extra work. So the contract also has an option to purchase new at $575 a set. Using Rocky Reach work, when we had the FEA analysis that showed high stress in stems, we did there where it's costing quite a bit more than $100,000, but we're estimating about $100,000 on these ones to go in and do machining to potentially reduce that stress concentration. Again, looking at financial options, we put some probabilities and costs together in this list, put some probability of repairs. If we did half the repairs that we did on B2, there's a dollar value of $175. We did a fatigue analysis on the wicket gates that also showed that the accumulation of stress over time, that the gates won't last 50 years, something will need to be done. So we put a probability, if we didn't do anything to them, we just reused them, with some minor repair work, that we probably could get about another 20 years out of them. Also, we've got this, as I mentioned, this undefined risk of corrosion fatigue. Do we find on these, or in 5, or in 10, or 15 years, do we get a whole bunch of cracks and wicket gates like we did the runner blades? So engineering's recommendation is we think it makes sense to buy 3 more sets of wicket gates, but since we spent quite a bit on the B2, let's go ahead and reuse those. Since they actually haven't been put back in service since we did the repair work. This also, the benefits of buying the three new sets means that if you look at the probabilities and the costs and those bullets, that's about 275 in value you might do. But if we have that corrosion fatigue issue, all that would be forgone and you'd have to buy new wicket gates anyway. So we looked at some risks. So if you buy new, they're not risk-free, we're finding when you buy new stuff. Sometimes it doesn't last like you intend. For these components, we think that the risk is pretty low. One of the reasons is because geometrically, we wouldn't be resizing them and making them smaller, which is what sometimes happens when you buy something brand new. It's more compact and small. We already have the physical size and dimension that all these things need to fit in. And using new materials from today, we can get strengths that are over twice. So we think pretty low probability, buying new, fitting the geometry. It's going to be the same dimensions. We'll have lots of oversized. Stresses should be low, should be able to last quite a long time. However, the risk of reusing these is probably pretty high, especially over that 50-year duration. And so we factored that into the evaluation. Also, there's potential collateral damage. If a pole comes loose, you have a shaft keyway failure or wicket gate stem failure. So we've got some orders of magnitudes of costs that we could incur from one of those components failing. Schedule risk. So with what we know on the limited condition assessment that we did and through the finite element analysis, we need to do some remedial work so that impacts our schedule. We're thinking it's about at least a month from what we know, and then there's the small chance that there might be something that we have to buy new, and if we have to buy new when we take it out, we got about a 10-month delay to the schedule to be able to go buy that and procure it. With the new option, there is some risk that it doesn't get manufactured. A manufacturer doesn't meet the contractual obligations to Andritz to supply the part on time, so we put a small probability of stuff potentially being late. So we put a lot of those probabilities, those costs, into a financial model that the risk department ran here, Kurt Carlson and Mark Mullins, Dave Nelson worked on that. What we started with is, well, in the past 7 months or so, we've had changes in pricing. So how does the project look? So we did an update. So just comparing to what we knew in December with all those costs, the schedule, and now future carbon, capacity, energy prices, what did that do to our project financials? So when we presented it in December, it was 13.9, and now the financials are 10.2. So starting with that 10.2, we looked at the option of, well, let's stay with and reuse these components. Combining some of those costs with those probabilities, we come up with, well, we'd probably have to spend about $1.4 million just getting stuff in the condition that we could even reuse it. And ran the financial analysis, assuming that probably 20 years out we would have something major come up that we would need to go ahead and replace components anyway. So that came up with a 9.2 internal rate of return. Then the other option, which was using the recommendations that we have for each of those components, came up with about a 9.5%, so slightly better. So financials look reasonable to replace. As well as we can avoid schedule risk and other failure risk. So to summarize, financially, what that recommendation looked like was the rotor poles. If we can negotiate kind of a hybrid between the new with reusing the windings, that'd be about $750,000 in budget increase to the project. For the wicket gates, it would be 3 times 575 for 1.75 total. And then for generator shafts, four of those would be about $1 million total to the budget, with a summation of $5.75 million budget increase. So we did prepare a resolution to help meet our contractual dates for consideration this afternoon. And so what in that resolution, it would revise the budget up to $5.75 million with a new total of $70,050,000, and then also it would give the general manager the authority to execute field work orders. Might be more than one because we still need to negotiate the pole work. We do have pricing already for, again, the wicket gates and the generator shafts for the general manager to sign those as we work those out with Andritz.
And warranty?
Warranty is the same contract provisions now, which is 2 years.
Any additional questions right now? I'm looking at the clock, and I'm thinking we're going to have time to ask more questions if we think about them over lunch, too. If we don't,
absolutely. Yeah.
We don't have anything right now, but if we do, any member of the public have any questions or comments on the presentation? I'd suggest we break for lunch, and we know that we have the opportunity to ask more questions on this.
You bet. Yep.
Okay. Let's break for lunch. Come back at 1 o'clock.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Good job, Brad.
Yep, good job. Hi.
Moving into the you always notice when I'm late.
Yeah.
I have an excuse.
Good afternoon. So. I'd like to reconvene the August 7th, 2017 Chelan Public Utility District Commission meeting. We met this morning in study session. This afternoon is our business session. And just like to remind any member of the audience, as I do in every meeting, to silence your cell phone. And if you wish to speak to any agenda item, please come up to the table. Use the microphone because our meetings are recorded, and state your name and address for the record. But we do welcome that input. So with that being said, the first item on our agenda this afternoon is our consent agenda, which this morning was modified to include items 12, 13, 14, and 15. So is there a motion to approve the consent agenda, including those items?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the consent agenda as presented and revised.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried.
Chairman Smith, before we move on, Kirk is still here, and I did have a question about the B1 before. So really, what boiling this down, if we didn't invest in the newer parts, we're looking at somewhere around 20 years of maybe comfort with the rehab, closer to 50 for the going to the new parts.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think for the price being estimated here, that's of value.
Yeah. We made the assumption that based on what we saw in the stress analysis and fatigue analysis, that we would be in there in about 20 years, regardless.
Yeah.
Replacing those components based on what we see.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
Resolution number 11.
Resolution number 11. I think Gary Rice is here. It's a resolution ratifying field work orders numbers 1-8. Authorizing final acceptance of work performed under bid number 16-50 with Strider Construction Company, Incorporated of Bellingham, Washington, and authorizing payment of retainage. So Gary Rice is here to present that.
Thank you. Gary Rice, Project Manager in Engineering Project Management. This resolution is for board acceptance of work under contract 1650, Lake Wenatchee Wastewater Treatment Facilities Improvements Project. The contract involved replacement of the wastewater lagoon and baffles, modification to site valving, installation of a sodium hydroxide injection system, and complete replacement of the electrical control and monitoring systems at the facility. The project resolves Department of Ecology water quality compliance issues associated with an aging lagoon system. 8 field work order change orders were issued for a total of $41,727.22. Or 5.8% of the original contract price. Difficulty in estimating the volume of the submerged biosolids for disposal and obtaining an accurate subsurface survey during design required that additional work be performed by the contractor. The Department of Ecology staff assisted in delineating suitability of the biosolids for off-site disposal, and additional import sand was used to achieve necessary lagoon design contours. A temporary holding tank system that was originally contemplated for construction was eliminated from the contract for a price deduct. Upon commissioning of the new electrical and control systems, certain additional electrical modifications were found to be necessary to achieve the intent of the design.
Final completion was reached on July 12, 2017. There were some lesson learns documented during this project. The first, anticipated work required to separate suitable from unsuitable biosolids for disposal. A bid price schedule line item was, with estimated allowance, would be useful in future projects of this type. We knew that there would be some of this difficulty in delineating what was suitable and what wasn't suitable, but so we could have had an allowance set up as a bid price item instead of having it all go towards a change order. So we used it as a change order this time, so it weights the change order a little bit heavier than it would have been because it really was partially anticipated. Another lessons learned would be to complete district-provided programming of the control systems well ahead of equipment arrival. I might mention that the district didn't do the programming. We hired a consultant, but separate from the design contract. This is so that when we enter commissioning, that can go as efficiently as possible. So the programming overlapped the commissioning process, so it slowed down the commissioning process and resulted in some time extensions, not cost extensions, but just time extensions. And then the last one that we had was we learned that we could have better coordinated the instrument installations within the confined spaces. There's a receiving tank, and we had to install some new instrumentation and also the sodium hydroxide injection system monitoring equipment inside of that. It was full at the time that the contract was going on, but there was a planned outage for the spring to go down and inspect that vault or that big receiving tank area. So the contractor proposed that we wait until that's unwatered so that he could go in there and do that without effluent inside of that area. It provides a safer way to get in and do that work. So since we had some delays in the programming and the commissioning of the project, we decided that we could allow that to happen in the springtime. So doing that made it a little bit safer. And it was no cost change, but it just would have been something that could have been foreseen. So looking forward to see safer ways to do things at times of outages is always a good practice.
Okay.
Is there any questions anyone has on this project?
Any questions, Commissioner?
I think the one comment that I would like to highlight here is this is really a good news. It's the completion of a successful project. It rehabilitates, brings that wastewater treatment up to standards, and it also resolves Department of Ecology water quality compliance issues. So it's a good news story that, A, it was completed and completed very successfully.
Out of curiosity, and maybe you don't have the answer, it might be Ron Slabaugh that does, but in the past, historically, part of that waste treatment facility was a spray field. You had the lagoon, and in the certain months you could use the spray field, and other times you discharge into the river. Is that going to remain the same?
Yes, it will.
Okay. I was just curious about that. It's been a few years since I've been up there, and I do recall that when I was up there.
Yeah, it still operates the same way.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like some of the work could have been visited by Mike Rowe.
Had dirty jobs.
He had dirty jobs.
Okay. Any other questions from anybody? Thank you.
Thank you.
So our only other resolution is Resolution 16.
And whenever you have a tank underneath that's receiving it.
Resolution 16 is revising the capital project budget for Rock Island Powerhouse 1, Units B1 to B4 modernization, and authorizing the general manager to execute field work order change orders to contract 16-60 with Andritz Hydro for new wicket gates, generator shafts, and rotor pole bodies.
Good afternoon, Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management. This is the resolution that's a follow-up from the presentation from this morning. Again, I'd just like to add that we didn't put specific dollar values or list the number of field work orders yet because we're going to be negotiating for the pole refurbishment and pole body replacement work. But the other items, the wicket gates and the shafts, we'll work on those field work orders with legal this week and get them issued by the 15th so we can maintain that price that's in the contract as well as the schedule that comes with that.
So, commissioners, we had a full briefing on this this morning. Any questions other than the one Commissioner Bowles put out a few minutes ago, prompted by that briefing this morning? Questions, comments? Any other member of the audience, any questions or comments? I think we got a good briefing this morning. I think the question that Commissioner Bowles posed was right on target about the cost-benefit analysis in this process. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioners, we've got resolutions number, I believe it's 11 and 15 to consider.
11
and 16. Did I say 15? Okay, 11 and 16.
I move to approve resolution 11 and 16 as stated.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Been moved and seconded to approve resolutions 11 and 16 as presented. Is there any discussion?
I would just like to say that on resolution 16, it's a good thing to have foresight into the future. The cost of pulling these components out in 20 years, having equipment offline, lost revenue, as well as cost of what the pieces and the parts might cost 20 years in the future from now. It just goes to show how staff is taking a long-term vision of the equipment and making sure that we do squeeze that 50-year horizon out of these pieces of machinery. So I just think it's wonderful that we move forward and put these turbines in place that will function for the next 50 years without interruption. So congrats to the staff for looking into the future.
And I think, you know, I asked the question earlier about the warranty of the 2 year, and I know one of the priorities for Steve is to push the envelope, and you know, if we're going to spend that kind of money and we expect these to last, you know, into the 50-year mark, then I think that still is a good thing to do, is to continue to push these vendors.
Any other comments? I do have to add that when we took the lunch break, I asked Rep. Beckford about one of the things that you've heard me talk about, but I just think it's so unique and so phenomenal. In that old facility, the bearings for the turbines were made out of ironwood, and yes, they are planning on reusing those ironwood bearings. And I just, that's just sort of a phenomenal statement about engineering of 90 years ago and people, what we need to sort of emulate. So, anyway, have we voted on this yet? Okay. Thank you. I knew somebody would be keeping track. Any other discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving resolutions 11 and 16 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. All right. We're on to manager items.
Manager items. Lorna Klemanski.
Sorry. Okay. Chad, are you ready?
We have an update on the Leavenworth substation and some of the outreach that's been going on there.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Chad Rissman, Distribution Engineering Manager, Director of Engineering and Asset Management. We last week had a community meeting, wanted to give you a little bit of an update on that in pursuit of the substation construction for a new substation in the Leavenworth area. Just a little bit of a backdrop there. This last winter we were 88% total capacity, so we're in pursuit of an additional substation. So that's 88% of our substation capacity. There's existing two substations in the Leavenworth area. There's quite a bit of growth that's occurring right now, so we expect this to be good timing. So in that pursuit of a new substation, we are, as you know, the district, you authorized the purchase of a piece of property that we're referring to as the Chumstick site. And so that's the leading site for the new Leavenworth substation, or the additional Leavenworth substation. So the next phase of that is to start looking at some of the design parameters and getting an understanding from the stakeholders and the folks that are going to be directly impacted by that, to include also the transmission line. So this community meeting's primary purpose was to get together and discuss concerns over the general identified routes, specifics to be determined down the road, and we'll talk about that a little bit in next steps. But primary purpose of this was to staff to communicate to the community, to some at a community meeting, what we were generally thinking, and to acquire some feedback from that group so that we can, as we're pursuing designs, incorporate that into the designs.
Tika Sellers, Customer Outreach Specialist with Customer Utilities. So like Chad mentioned, the main objective of the meeting was to talk to folks about the transmission routes. Up until this point, we had used the what we're calling ALT-2, which is the blue line there in the middle, for all of our mapping and things like that. And then the consultants had helped us come up with a couple other options. So people knew that transmission was going to be something that was needed, but they didn't have the details. So we reached out to about 90 residents in the area, and about 40 showed up. So I would say maybe about a third of them came. We had a standing room only there in the Leavenworth Auditorium. So the stakeholders that we, or the group that we pulled from, was it basically just drew a big circle around those three transmission line routes, and then a little bit around the substation. There was maybe about six folks there that are interested in the substation design, so we're going to make a, no pun intended, but a subgroup there, and meet with those folks separately and talk just about substation design, because they really weren't that interested in the transmission line routing. So that was the so we worked really hard to reach out to these folks, which I think was you know, why we had so many folks there. So we made phone calls, we sent postcards and emails. So we made sure that we hit every single person in that area, and that included property owners and current PUD customers. So we had a handful of folks that own property in that area. We only have mailing addresses for them, so they did get a postcard, and we have heard from some of them. So I'm going to let Chad talk about those, and then I'll talk a little bit about the about what we heard from folks while we were there.
So at the public meeting, Gary Rice presented these various options for the transmission, regardless of which site. Maybe just a little orientation here. Existing PUD substation here, PUD offices, the school here. So this is Chumstick Highway here, and then North Road here, coming up here. So just a little orientation. The Fox Road, Fox Hollow Road area up in here. So there are three existing transmission lines that come into the area. There are two that are up on the hill. One is the McKenzie-Beverly line. The other one is coming from McKenzie and just stopping here in Leavenworth. There's another one down that generally follows the North Road that comes from Anderson Canyon. The one of these transmission lines is the McKenzie-Beverly line. It's a smaller conductor, so we don't plan on attaching to it, connecting to it. But what we'd like to have in the Leavenworth area when we're done is a loop, a transmission loop, so that we have two independent sources. As of now, the transmission tap here in the yellow comes down this Fox Hollow Road, comes down North Road, crosses the railroad tracks, and then meets up with the other line that comes up from Anderson Canyon. So there's two separate electrical paths, but they both end up coming onto the same physical path, which presents risk associated with any kind of outage on one pole or one line. More than likely would affect both circuits. The failure of both circuits would take down what now we plan to be three substations. So we want to get away from that. We're recommending getting away from that and building a complete physical loop. So just generally, that loop would come off of this transmission line up here. It would come down to the new substation, and regardless if it was the men's site, either the men's site or the Chumstick sites, any of these sites, the routing would be very the same, very much the same. So we didn't focus in on this so much for the substation selection because all three were going to require the same transmission. So the general route would be coming down off of the transmission line up there, coming to the substation, and then coming back around here, the Chumstick Highway, and into our existing substation, and then back out here. So we have a complete physical loop, two electrical circuits, two independent sources. So that's the general idea. Where we have some choices that project manager Gary Rice has identified is where we connect off of this the transmission lines to the north, up here in the Fox Hollow Road area. We can extend the existing transmission line and come down this area, this way here, coming down Cemetery Road and then hitting the North Road and down to the site. We can utilize a portion of the existing line, tap off and come down Fox Hollow Road, and then hit North Road and come down this way. Or we can come down and follow. There's an existing tap that comes down here, comes down and goes directly across, almost straight down south to the railroad tracks. And it comes along here. But what we were talking about doing is creating a physical separation between those transmission lines and not putting them on the same pole line so that we don't have all our eggs in one basket, per se. So pros and cons just on at a very high level with each one of these. If we did go with, say, this upper line here, this connection, we would be able to then vacate or abandon this existing tap that goes down. So that's an advantage. A disadvantage, though, is we're impacting a lot more properties than what these transmission lines are impacting now. So we're at the very beginning of the pros and cons, presented these various options, and the purpose, as Tika said, was to just get some initial feedback. Our next steps are to go further with the design and acquire and get some greater detail on what things might look like. So, any questions on what the options are? Or Tika was going to talk a little bit more about next steps, but questions about the options and what's being considered?
Yeah. Which one is the least disruptive to residential customers that we have?
We're hoping to understand that. The feedback that we got seemed to be a little bit from just from looking at these general routes that were identified, and we're not locked into these routes, so we can make some adjustments. We need to understand exactly where the poles are going to go because that's where we could start having specific conversations with people. We're not there yet, but we wanted to get this information out. But there seemed to be a little bit more concern with the middle option and the upper option than there was with this lower option here. So that was one of the takeaways, was that there seemed to be less concern about this. So
thank you.
Yeah, so like Chad mentioned, the majority of the folks that were at the meeting tended to favor that lowest route just on the very high-level information that we had now. So part of the next steps will be the consultant working to understand more detail about those three routes and essentially do an analysis similar to what we did on the substation sites. So they'll start doing that on all three of those routes. We encouraged folks at the meeting to, submit their public comment. We've heard from a couple of folks, and the people that we did hear from via email agreed that the lower route would probably be the least impactful. But, you know, we do have some folks that have property down in that area, and although it's an orchard now, wanted to make sure that we remembered that that is also development property and that there may be people living there at some point in time. I think one of the advantages that Gary has already pointed out is that that lower line may be able to stay on PUD and Chelan County property, which is an advantage. So those are the types of details that we'll understand more through the analysis and whether those particular routes are feasible. So I imagine that after I reach out to the stakeholder group via email by the end of today, we'll start getting some more comments and things like that in. And once we have a handful, I'll make sure that you see those. So next steps will be to work on the consultant's detail, and then we'll meet with this group again in about 3 or 4 weeks and get back to them what we've discovered with the consultant's analysis. And then, like I said, we'll meet with the smaller group to talk about substation design.
One clarification, we're moving forward with design work on all three of these options so that we can understand the details and the particulars. So based on that first meeting, we're not abandoning the other options. We're just... we wanted to get them out in the open so that everybody understand what the variations were that were being considered. So pull together how many properties are going to be impacted, some additional renderings, some costs. The biggest concerns are aesthetics and view impacts, EMF health concerns that we heard. I think those were, for the most part, the concerns that we heard.
So would you envision with that lower option having, in essence, potential of side-by-side poles?
Correct, which would, you know, that would put a lot of poles and lines sort of in that same corridor area. And from a view impact, so what we might want to do is make sure that we understand what that might look like and get some renderings of some various views so that we can get a sense of what the choices are between sort of the other options and that option.
It's kind of interesting. I've gone through those and driven along those lines. The middle one definitely cuts right across quite a few homes, their view. The top one drops down along an orchard, and I'm sure areas would have some view impact. But I was surprised from my standpoint along as it drops along the bottom there, it's quite a bit lower and kind of skirts under the view of look over the top of it. And it doesn't, my own personal feeling was a great option.
Just one note, I'll add that the middle route follows an existing distribution corridor, which was why it was logical for us just to choose it in the beginning to at least move forward with the substation analysis. So there's some options around that as well.
Most of that property down along that lower yellow line down in here, right down here, this is our property anyway. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kimberly Craig is going to provide an update on the solar eclipse and planned activities around the solar eclipse.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I am happy to give you a little information about events we have both for...
There they are.
Yes.
It's right out of the movie theaters in the 60s.
There we go. For both the employees and for the community around the solar eclipse on August 21st. I will take off the certified glasses. The reason I brought them to you is just to point out two things. They'll have a CE... that's a certification that they need if you're buying eclipse glasses. And they also say ISO, International meet the international standards. So look for those two things if you're getting your eclipse glasses. What we have planned for employees, we have ordered the eclipse glasses. There's a great demand for those. So we were on back order for a little bit, but we have been assured now they'll be shipped on August 9th, which will... have them arrive here in good time. We have brown bag information sessions planned for employees, which will include receiving a pair of the certified Eclipse glasses. And I'll provide the actual dates and the schedule for you so that you can have them. But we're doing that on the 15th at the Confluence Technology Center, on the 16th at Rocky Reach, on the 17th at Rock Island, and on the 18th at headquarters. So those will all be events where employees can come get a little bit of information. We've had a couple of Eclipse enthusiasts step forward who are employees. One is David Shaw, who began with giving safety minutes about Eclipse safety and really has developed a passion for this. And so he'll be speaking at the community events. And then the PUD's Mr. Science, Jim White, also has quite a passion for this and all things solar, as you know. And he will be our Mr. Wizard, Mr. Science, at a kids' demonstration workshop for the kids and their parents on Thursday, August 17th, 5:30 to 7 at Walla Walla Point Park. We'll be in Shelter 1. We realize that it could be hot and smoky. We're going to plow ahead, but we're planning to have water and some light refreshments for folks who come out. Jim will do some real hands-on things. This is for kids. So we'll have the solar water fountain, and then we will have the kids help us show what will happen during an eclipse to that solar water fountain. We actually are going to have the kids be an eclipse. We'll have a sun and we'll have a moon and we'll all move across and we'll show what that's going to like. And then we'll walk through making a pinhole viewer. We're planning to distribute up to 100 pair of glasses at that event. Actually on the date, we'll also be sharing information about other community groups who are planning events. And at this point, we know that for the 21st, Wenatchee Valley Museum and Cultural Center is planning an event during the eclipse at Mission Ridge. And then the Kashmir Museum is developing an event as well at Pioneer Village. So we hope you'll attend, and I'll make sure you have the information on the employee events.
Kimberly, what was the date and time for the Jim White Show?
That is on Thursday, August 17th, 5:30 to 7 p.m. In Shelter 1 at Walla Walla Point Park. I didn't realize how dark these were. I could not see you at all when I had these glasses.
That's an improvement.
Thank you, Kimberly. Jeff, are you still doing the Confluence Park hunting regulations?
Yes, sir.
And I think you have some other folks.
We have a special guest this afternoon, Jeff Smith, Managing Director of District Services. I'll ask our guest to introduce himself.
Hello, Commissioners. My name is Steve Crown. I'm the Chief of Police for the City of Wenatchee.
So it was late last year that Chief Crown brought to our attention public concerns about hunting activities within Wenatchee Confluence State Park Natural Habitat Area. As you know, the area is intended to be a preserve, an opportunity for the public to observe and learn about waterfowl and wildlife in an interpretive environment. And there were some issues that were starting to happen. And the chief came in, and we had a discussion about that, which were.
So early in the, well, actually it was midway through the hunting season, we had citizens that were actually taking advantage of the Apple Capitol loop and doing some photography down there. And the photography was interrupted by several gunshots, and it came into play that a lot of the gunshots were actually happening on a multitude of different pieces of property, all of which were owned or had holdings with the PUD. So our first shot at addressing the issue was really to get a hold of Jeff and talk about some possible solutions. In the process, we also found out that our city ordinance was inadequate for dealing with violators on the hunting side of it, because we in the penalty phase, we weren't actually able to levy any sort of fine. It was tied to our Title 16, which is mostly for code violation enforcement. So you had to have gone through the entire process of telling somebody in the field that they're hunting illegally, that they would have to correct the matter and then you'd have to check back on it, just like you would with code enforcement. So that doesn't work real well with police work. So we decided that that was needed to be fixed. So in the process of fixing our own city ordinance, we talked to Chelan County. We brought in our stakeholders, which also involved the parks, Washington State Parks, and the WDFW, Fish and Wildlife. And so we talked about some possible solutions. Where we derived is to match Douglas County's ordinance, which outlaws any sort of shooting from the shoreline to the center of the river, from Otabashan Bridge all the way down to George Seller. So we just kind of wanted to match up Chelan County's ordinance with Douglas County's ordinance, and we were able to put together a fairly successful package, went in front of the Chelan County commissioners. Ultimately, they agreed to pass the new ordinance, and that's where we're at today.
That was kind of an interesting coalition that we'd never worked together before, with the city, DNR, state parks, PUD, Fish and Wildlife, and the county commissioners unanimously just about 2 weeks ago approved that prohibition. So again, it's between the two bridges and on both sides of the river. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions, but successful effort. Thanks to the chief.
Very Thank good you. Thing.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have one more. Are you ready, Lorna? Lorna's going to give us an update on the 30 Under 35 program, and we have two employees that have been honored with that.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Last week, I had the distinct pleasure of attending the Wenatchee World event to recognize 30 of this community's outstanding young people, including two of our own. This list honors those who have shown leadership in their professions and in the community. And I felt really proud to be a community that produced so many accomplished and community-minded individuals. I'm also proud to be part of this organization because we also have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to talented, dedicated, and public-spirited employees. Our two employees recognized by the Wenatchee World are Maura Gillen and Katie Marshall. Maura has been with us since September of 2015. Despite being relatively new to the community, she has been active in community organizations, including the Junior Service League, Girls on the Run, and fundraising events such as Touch a Truck. Katie Marshall is our other honoree. Katie came to Wenatchee after graduating with her master's degree from Central Washington University. She worked first for the state auditor's office, which gave her the opportunity to observe the professionalism, dedication, and pride in their work of district employees. And then she joined us as an internal auditor in July of 2013, and against all odds was so liked and well-respected that we awarded her a new position to manage our poll attachment program. Both Katie
some would call God that punishment.
Yeah. Is that a good thing? Yeah.
That's not easy when you're auditing people and pointing out all of the things where they let fall.
Yet,
let
yet another successful steal by John Stoll. Of one of
Both Katie and Maura credit their success in part to being surrounded by ambitious, driven individuals who are generous with their knowledge. I think it's, and by family members who instilled a strong work ethic in them. And it's typical of them to credit others, but they have both worked very hard and applied their many talents to everything they do, and they deserve, greatly deserve this honor. So, congratulations.
Yes. Wow. I think our faces are big enough.
Big picture. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
And with that, we are through with manager's items.
All right. Okay, commission item. Mr. Bowles.
Yeah, I have one. At the September Waputa meeting in hosted by Douglas, they're going to be doing an auction with the proceeds going to charitable organizations in the area. And so, consequently, they've asked each PUD to put together a gift basket, a case of wine, something that could be auctioned off at Waputa, and then those proceeds going to help others. So I think the first question is, do we want to participate? And if so, what? And who would you like to run it down if we decide to do it? So, just thoughts?
My first answer would be, yeah, I want to participate. And maybe we as a commission, you can do something. Yeah.
I think it'd be great to participate. I would agree. Yeah.
Did I hear you offering to take a lead on that,
Dennis? Well, I'd be happy to, yeah.
Would that be?
Are you suggesting just the commissioners?
Yeah. It wouldn't
be involved. We wouldn't open it up to other staff?
Good point, Ann.
I mean, I would think staff might want to be involved too.
Sure. Don't we have some lamprey?
Probably not.
I don't know how we sort of a nascent idea right now, but
yeah. So my maybe the best way to proceed would be for you to resolve it for the commissioners, and then we could certainly inquire as to whether there was an opportunity for other participation, and
right.
whether that means other staff members might secure another item that would be put up for an additional auction or participate in some fashion with the commissioners. Either way, I think it's possible as long as we're all contributing.
I will volunteer to work with Dennis and represent the staff and coming up with whatever the staff would like to
Perfect.
Do.
I would say that at our last meeting out in Ocean Shores, we didn't do an auction, but we did an event working with a private nonprofit that was we were building lunches for kids during summertime lunches. And the response from the PUD commissioners and staff was tremendous. And the appreciation that came from the people that had been doing this in their local community was also really tremendous. And so we may have started a new something for those two or three times a year that we're out in a community like Douglas County or Ocean Shores. This may be something really identifies public power as being part of the public and caring about their communities, and that's what we are. That's who we are. We care about our communities. So it's a really good event.
Yeah, and part of that was also a book drive that would go into the local schools identified at elementary levels where the books in the library are less than adequate, and so there was a real significant contribution on the part of commissioners to buy new books off this list and donate those to the elementary school. So some good things going, and it's building that relationship when you go into that community to have a meeting and, you know, helping meet some local needs. So this is, I think, a Lena Ron Skagen path that is, yeah, I think, worth going down.
You bet.
So thank you. I'll work with Mike and kind of let you know where we are. And
yeah, we got a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super. Thank you.
Yeah, if we have to go wine shopping, Mike, it's too bad.
That's why I volunteered.
Any other commissioners? I've got one myself, but any other commissioner items?
Thank you.
I think I mentioned it to a couple of people today, but it came to my attention that our Senator Cantwell is going to be here in Chelan County, probably on Saturday. I believe the time is from 10 until 11:30 for a town hall or an open house meeting. And the thought emerged in me that we at Chelan PUD over the last several years have been very much the recipient of a lot of hard work on our behalf by her back in Washington, D.C. And I've decided that I'm, on behalf of the utility, want to go to that meeting and express our gratitude in a public fashion there at that meeting this coming Saturday. And so just thought I would share with all of you that that is my plan coming up. All right. Commission travel. And I kept looking for you, and I forgot you were sitting there.
Sorry.
Close. Yes. Thank you.
Hey, Lisa Sanders, admin and finance. First, I'd like to thank you all for bringing your time books in to help me get through today. Just doing the board meeting and not doing expense reports. So thank you very much. It makes a big difference for me. And so travel. We have Waputa at Douglas PUD coming up, and I have everyone's registrations.
No, you don't have mine. I'm not going.
Well, that's what I have.
You do.
Going.
Okay, yeah, because I'm going to be going to NWPPA.
Yes.
Which, is that on here? No, not the one in September. September quarterly meeting in Salt Lake City.
Okay.
I think you have a hotel. I think you registered me for a hotel. It's the exact same dates.
Okay. I have Commissioner Bowles and Commissioner Congdon not attending.
Oh, okay.
And Commissioner Arso not attending on September.
Which is this?
Correct, September 13th.
No, I have Bowles attending.
I am attending.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Commissioner Congdon and Arso not attending.
There we go.
Okay. And the water workshop in September. Commissioners Congdon, possibly.
Possibly Smith.
Possibly Smith. I don't have anything specific for the October Waputa meetings, except that Commissioner Congdon is not attending or is not available.
That's not a regular meeting, is it?
It's a budget committee.
Individual committee.
Yeah. Awards committee, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah, and I will be attending that. I think you've got that on there. So. I don't think there's a registration. I will need a hotel room, I think, for one night.
Okay.
Yeah, for the budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I have Commissioner Congdon attending Women in Public Power in October in Portland. Then Energy Northwest in October in Kennewick.
I will not be attending.
Okay. So Commissioner Arsenault and Congdon will not be attending.
Yeah. And I'll be there.
Okay.
My intention is to be there.
We'll work it out if something changes.
Right.
Okay. And November for Waputa meetings in Olympia, Commissioner Congdon not attending.
That's a question mark.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Okay. Then into November, we have the Waputa Annual Conference. I have hotel rooms held, but that's all we have at this point. Is there anything else?
Thank you.
Okay.
Nope. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
I think this is working,
Lisa,
well.
I'll just give you kind of a possible update. At the last Waputa meeting, there was a call out for volunteers, and I raised my hand for both the budget committee and also the planning committee.
Okay.
They have not made decisions yet, but both of those would require travel to Olympia, and I'll keep you posted on that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other follow-up on action items from the previous meeting?
Correct. We have one item from the July 24th meeting, which was to provide the history of rate increases compared against inflation. that has been done, but it's my understanding that it's still being provided to the board, so you should see that soon. When Steve gets back. The board action items from June 26th revolved around the delegation of authority, particularly keeping the sole source treatment on the discussion list, the field work order change order process, and then a one-page summary of proposed delegation resolution changes. That is in progress. The work is ongoing, and we would expect to see a completion of that in the September time frame. Correct, Eric? Okay.
So I just to provide further clarity, still in the process of meeting with you to collect individual thoughts of commissioners, which then I'll try to assimilate. I do have the field work order change order and Commissioner Congdon's sole source on that list to talk about. When I complete those and get them assimilated, that's when I would think it'd be valuable to produce a one-page summary of what's being proposed for review and discussion in advance of any formal action on the matter, which would come after you have a chance to review that and ask questions.
That it? Except for delegation from this meeting? Were there any?
Okay, we'll formalize that one, obviously. The only other one, which was kind of a quasi-action item, was Commissioner McKenna had spoken about County Commissioner England speaking on 5G up at Manson. And I did agree to follow up and see what I could find out regarding that particular subject.
So, do you have any time frame at all on when that's going to happen?
No, I just saw it come from the weekly summary and then watched the video and was just I was just curious where that was coming from. And
So we're going to try to track that down and see if we can get some answers to it, and I will get an update to everybody.
Good. Always a successful meeting when the person in that chair has all the to-do takeaways.
I didn't say I wasn't going to delegate it.
We must have one for Eric, don't we?
Oh, I have several that are still carrying over.
Okay. Okay. And that it?
That's it.
There any additional public comment? Susan.
Well, thank you for coming.
Oh, geez. there's a bunch of Rotarians here. Yeah. Good to see you here.
Yeah.
All right. Any other matters to come before the commission? I've got one on my list. We've had quite a discussion today about August 21st being the day of the eclipse. The eclipse is at 10:18, something like that. Our meetings normally start at 10 o'clock. We need on that morning to look at potentially scheduling our meeting to start at 9 o'clock in executive session and then recessing for some time period so everybody has the opportunity at the eclipse. So does it require
a It would motion, require a motion, motion to start to the
change
meeting.
The start time of the meeting?
Mr. Chairman, I propose a motion that we change the time start time of our August 21st board meeting to 9 a.m., to immediately go into executive session.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to start our change the start time of our August 21st meeting to 9 a.m. to immediately go into executive session. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. We are in need today of an executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCW's and to consider the selection of a site for the acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of increased price, again, as authorized by the RCWs, for approximately how long?
Half an hour.
For approximately half an hour after a seven-minute break. We reconvene at 2:05. It is 2:40 p.m. on August 7th. We've been in executive session for approximately half an hour. We're coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions were made while in executive session. Is there any other business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned.